And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence. Another lovely week. We have a lot of stuff getting done this weekend, so I'm going to tell you about it here in a bit. This is what's going on. In the second hour, where's my glasses? In the second hour, Brett Murray, now I met him up at the Consumer Electronics Show, and he did a Kickstarter for his foot hammock, you know, which I thought was very cool. I'm really interested in this Kickstarter thing for a lot of good ideas and people. We had the gentleman that had the MyType keyboard, you know, and it's just it's so I'm really getting used to it. All my taking around computing, needing to do stuff, has gotten down to itty-bitty little packet, you know, because of that. And he made one good comment, you know, I thought was cool. It was 1990. This guy is 70 years old. It's 1990 that he decided, he goes, you know, I could see the first laptops and so on were coming out in PC world, magazines and so on. And he goes, I can see everything getting smaller, except the human hand. And he goes, if you want to touch type, you need to have, you know, a keyboard. He did it really well. I was really happy to see it was so successful. But it was also a Kickstarter. He spent $400,000 getting to the point where he only needed to spend $15,000. And I'm going, you know, this has changed everything, you know, this crowdsource funding. Well, the gentleman, he was a college student, you know, and a young guy, and he's doing a lot of gaming and so on and whatever he's watching on his monitor in his dorm room kind of deal. And he goes, I need just somewhere to put my feet, kind of relax, hang out, kind of, you know, and he put a hammock underneath, designed it, and it goes underneath the desk. Well, I was like going, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. So it's very comfortable, and he raised many times what he needed while he was at the Consumer Electronics. He turned it on, and boom, within hours, he's done. And I go, that's very cool. That's very cool. So we want to hear all about that. So we'll give you, you know, the foot hammock. And it's not just how good idea it is. It's, you know, development process, what he had to make, who designed, where did he go to get it manufactured, now that he's got the money to do it, where's it going to be made? Is he going to do it in his grandmother's basement? I mean, you know what? How about distributors? What about people that came out and talked to him and liked it and wanted to get some? You know, I mean, so that's what I found so fascinating about it. And we'll go ahead and get through that. Then in the last half hour, we have Jeremy Galula. Which is he's a representative from the Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF.org, and I wanted to talk to him about several things: privacy, innovation, creativity, and civil liberties in a digital world. Upcoming legislation that may have an impact on these issues. So they're a lobbying group, you know, for electronic freedom with Congress. And they do, I think they kind of manage some lawsuits and stuff too. They may represent different things or doing freedom of information requests for and that kind of stuff. We're going to find out more. I've talked to EFF before, and I've had a lot of people that need a lot of help. I don't even know where to send them. Should I send them to them? I'm not sure that that's what they do. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that, but what's coming up. And with this whole thing with the United Kingdom, all encryption by the serfs is prohibited. From crossbows to cryptography, You know, look, yeah, Donna's not here. You know, I was going to have her put up that article in the third hour because, you know, in 1988, when that article came out, from Crossbows to Cryptography, make sure you put that in the third hour, please. The reason was, it was an understanding of activists back when Donna and I first got started in the early 90s. We came across this and we published it in our newspaper we would do in the 90s. And the point that we were making is when they came out with PGP, pretty good privacy, pretty good protection, where it was for the email by Phil Zimmerman, the government came after him. They wanted to make an example. He was that generation, that era's Silk Road. He was Ross Ulbricht. Man, you are so not allowed to come up with encryption. That is, you're so not allowed. And it was so telling. They go, yeah, but we passed laws. You're not allowed. Why? Because you're not allowed. You're not allowed to be secret. The king gets to get... When I got burned, it was 19... You know, some of you may see, you know, there's little grafts and so on here from my legs. It was burned pretty bad. I mean, my right arm kind of caught most of it. And it was a, you know, big news day. I wake up in the hospital, I see myself on the news, and everything's white, and I go, I don't think I'm dead. But during that time, it was right when all this was coming out. And I'm in my drug-induced, pain thing. They're healing for a few months. And then, of course, you know, it's like a year thing. But as I was there and I first, all of a sudden it dawned on me what was going on. What was going on was, for the first time in human history, with Project Epsilon and Carnivore and all this other stuff, and PGP, for the first time, we were able to communicate relatively secretly. And I never did, because I didn't trust, you know, they're going to just flag. You know, they go, oh, look, that guy's using Start Page, you know. But anyway, so they come after you, and they just kind of analyze. Well, a lot of the guys they were sending out, you know, like biscuit recipes, where they're private public key combination and so on, and they go, oh yeah, and then you add the flour, and then but in the open phrases in their sig line at the bottom, it would be, you know, stuff like, you know, Durka Durka Jihad and Allah and assassination and president and Washington DC and, you know, empire, and just all kinds of trigger words to try and just get it, you know, scooped up by the vacuum, you know. And now they just go, seriously, they just take everything, man. So, you know, you don't even need to get on the list. So this was kind of part of that activism. I remember when that was first going on. I got to do this. Oh, we're just flooded with that. I'm going, you know, whatever. But so I could see the attitude. Government did not want you to be secret. And now they're coming out and they're just outright saying it. Well, they did before, but a lot of this generation hadn't heard this before. When you got Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, saying, civilian cryptography, where we can't read our subjects' thoughts, you're done. And that's what I realized there in my drug-induced, you know, haze or something. You know, and a friend of mine brought over a 3,500 baud modem. I mean, you're doing text emails. So I'm communicating, I'm seeing, I have my fingers bandaged and everything, and I wasn't participating a lot. So usually I'm participating, you know, I'm like, ooh, get some. But I was more observing. And then I could see, all of a sudden it dawned on me, for the first time in human history, the king has got inside the heads of the people. That was never possible before. You may get the writings, you have to read somebody's book, or he's a leader of, and people that think like him or follow him must think like him, and they all get grouped and all that kind of stuff. No. What they're able to do now is to look for character traits or thoughts or phrases or even the way you type. When you're writing, what you backspace, what you misspell, what you rephrase, it's how you're thinking. It's not just what. It's how. And I'm going, and I started to realize it. I'm going, wow, this is 94. I'm going into 94, beginning in 95. And I started writing about that to my friends. I'm going, oh man, you guys don't get it. It's like MySpace, Facebook kind of stuff. I go, they know more about individuals than they ever have throughout human history. What will they do with that type of capacity, with that information? What will they do? What will they do? I don't know. Whatever benefits them, I get that. Well, in the last half hour, Electronic Freedom Foundation will talk about that. We'll be right back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
You know, I checked this out. The foot hammock Kickstarter, they only needed $15,000 to do whatever, and they already raised almost $85,000. I tell you, you come up with a, you know, kicking idea, you get started, you know? All right. That's cool. I look forward to talking to those guys. This is what's going on, what we've been doing this weekend. Last week, you know, when I kind of started with understanding distributed technologies, you know, this is, you know, this encryption thing and so on and the blockchain stuff, I started getting, okay, we'll see. And then, so my next question is, can they, them, those that won't leave us alone, you know, those just want to be left alone, those just won't leave them alone, you know, I go, can they, them, those interact with Bitcoin in such a way to make it useless for whatever the promise was to begin with? That's all I wanted to know. Can they? You know, can the tech hold up to those trying to alter it, change it, do it, whatever? Can they? If they can, then they are, they will, they're gonna. They sure as hell want to. I mean, the neon flashing wah, example came from Cameron in the UK. They go, we don't like it. Nope, don't like it one little bitty bit. So I'm watching myself over there going, what? It's like a 7 second delay. Ew. All right. Anyway, so I'm going, all right, I want to go ahead and have a discussion about if they can, how it would happen. And if they can't, that we should celebrate and take advantage of it. When I was up at this Consumer Electronics Show, I finally kind of got a feeling that the concern was not whether the tech worked. That's not the concern. And then I confirmed this with Cody and Bruce Fenton, and we had that debate, you know, for the Bitcoin Foundation and Andreas Antonopoulos the next day, and we just, you know, kind of did a postmortem on it and so on. And back and forth, now it's quit it, and kind of get and answer my questions. And it looks like what the, when the manufacturing, and, you know, the kind of the products, the service industry, the apps that want to build their exchanges and all that kind of stuff, what they're looking for is this. We are not going to be able to be successful in our business plan if we get SWAT raids every other day. That probably is not going to work out. People aren't going to be using our service if it's been determined illegal and their, you know, resources are at risk. For me, I'm like, you know, if I can preserve, so I learned from Tuxedo how to do Bitcoin paper wallets. And I go, okay, I will take whatever I have. I want to sweep it off of the internet and off it. I don't want anybody to know anything about anything. I'll even go spend the money and buy another computer and printer and put it in, kind of, you know, and say, I got some Bitcoin I'll put over here. Okay? Not a lot, you know? But I mean, you know, I get, I don't know, none of your business. But I mean, you know, it's like, let's say $5,000 worth. Okay? I just want a little something over here. I'm willing to trade in some silver as it's going up and Bitcoin's going down. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, you get a little sweet spot there. You know, it might be all good. So I go ahead and I do that and I go, okay, now this set's over here. I just set it over here. What are you going to do in trading? How are you going to sweep and get? And I just put it over here. Then while I set that over there, then I'm like, all right, I still got enough silver and kind of, you know, play over here and be concerned about that. Okay, I'm good. Not a lot. I mean, you know, it's not, you know, buy anybody houses or anything, but it's enough in the future that if it goes stupid, because I keep giving it out to my kids. You know, they get married, have kids, whatever. You know, it's like, you know, it just starts flowing out. Here's another excuse for you to have some, because wind up going to them anyway. What's the difference? So I go, all right, so I'm counting on the economy and the dollar taking a dump. Now, I know, I doubt it'll go away. You know, it won't be worth anything, but I mean, I doubt it'll go away. But there's some weird stuff going on. I mean, just macro stuff around the world. So I'm going, okay, now what about the tech? Is it going to hold up? I mean, is Bitcoin going to be, well, it won't be wide adopted enough and only, you know, 4,000 poor people will be using it. Oh, okay. Is that all? I mean, 4 billion. You know, you have 4 billion people around the planet that are underbanked or can't get financial service or live in the jungle of whatever, and all of a sudden, satellite hip pocket the kid down the village, whatever is for the valley central command, they get the trade, and it's over. And I'm going, I see that coming. Now, a lot of the big money guys, they're looking at, they want hundreds of millions of dollars of my little company's worth and sell to a conglomerate of Goldman Sachs, and which is exactly what a lot of these guys are doing. I kid you not. You know, and you know it is. There are a lot of these people in the financial service. Here they come. They're going to flood over, and they're going to go, "Oh, look at this great app that we have that surveils everybody, and we interface with the man. It's just, oh, give me some." And they have nothing to do with freedom. And nothing to do with the empowerment of the individual, nothing to do. That's what the promise of the tech is. So when these guys are talking about, well, if it survives and if it this and if it, I go, what do you mean if? I mean, the tech works or it doesn't. I mean, we don't know by now. We don't have the smartest guys in the room across the freaking planet trying to hack this thing. And they haven't been able to do it. I mean, they'll hack the service providers, you know, for different things. The people that, you know, were dumb enough to give up their passwords to somebody to kind of, it's theirs now, you know. So I'm going, you know, what is the that you're worried about? I don't get it. Permission. But they might not give us permission to be free. They might not allow us to exchange value. They might not want us to be able to liquidate our valuables in one country and then Bitcoin flash it over to another country instantaneously for almost nothing. They might not like that. Oh, well, hell, that's news. So this is, I just thought, I go, wow, you guys are killing me. All right. So the tech is stable enough that I'm willing to start, you know, we need to learn about this because I think it's coming one way or another. Now, it's going to be wide adoption, whatever the hell that means. It means different things to people. You make a better mousetrap, boom, here it comes. You know, that Kickstarter. I need 10,000, boom, $250,000. I want one. Well, I need a, you know, $10,000. Boom, done. $80,000 because it's a good idea. Okay, well, I want to put a robot satellite on the moon to be done on SpaceX with the Google Lander kind of, and I just got an idea. Boom! $1 million. Go do it. You know, I'm just telling you, the limitations aren't there anymore. And it's not there in the minds of the people or even a 70-year-old guy with a dream for 30 years. And he gets his My Type keyboard done. And it's pimp. Donna, go get that, will you? It's in that case, that blue case I have in there. And I'm going, so now what am I willing to do about it? Well, it's usually just, it's a reset button, you know, that I get to, how much time I got? I got a reset button on like doing summits or events or whatever. I know the hotel. I know the, you know, equipment guys, audio, the visual, blah, 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 all the stuff that would take a lot of people 15 gazillion years. I can get it all done one afternoon. So what I did is I go, okay, Davi, I need some artwork done. We need a banner, you know, for the site. We need to create a special edition. I need to have some artwork for the email dispatch of that special edition. I need to get, you know, a masthead. I need to, it's all right. I know where it's at. So I go, okay, let's do it. Call the hotel. It's all set up. Sheridan Crescent, where we do our Freedom Summits before we're doing the Bitcoin Summit. Celebrate Pi Day, March 14th, 15th. Andreas wants to speak at 9:20, whatever the heck it is in the morning. How many decimals? I got no pie. So he's going to be doing it. Tux Event's going to speak. Davi Barker's going to do a wallet evaluation across the board. We're going to have workshops from the exchanges in the afternoon.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, I'm trying to get some video for you. Or, can you scan, recommend? No. And open files. Yep. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and show you what we got going on here. Open up that one. Open up that one. Wrong program. We're going to go show you the banners and the signs. If you go to bitcoinsummit.info, you'll see what we're doing here. Now, the Freedom Summits that we put on, this is the logo that we've had since 2001. And what we've done is I want it to be kind of, the same. I want to see the let's see if I can go create play. See, this is an HP Media thing. I hate this thing. Okay, we go to the next one. Next one, next one, next one. Is there a next one? Can't do that. I hate this thing already. So you do hear, this is the ad that we're using on the pedal cabs. We have 8 pedal cabs that are going around for the Super Bowl, the NFL experience and the game and all kind of all week. And it started last night, a lot of the festivities. So what we're doing is this sign is on all of these pedal cabs. We have 4 of these and 4 of the Freedom Phoenix general one that we do sometimes with this company. That's owned by a friend of mine. He goes, hey, I got space, on 8 of my pedal cabs. I might even have 9 that has no advertising on the back and everything. You want to do the kind of, yes, I do, for the low, rock bottom, rip them off price of not that much. So I go, okay, I'll go ahead and do that. So we will promote the Bitcoin Summit. And I'm going, wow, this would be a good idea. Now, by doing that, what does it give me? I don't know. I mean, my whole thing is that I just want to be able to promote, celebrate Pi Day, 3/14/15, 3/14/15. A Bitcoin workshop for new users and merchants at the Sheraton Crescent Resort. It'll be all day that Saturday. In the morning, we'll have some understanding speakers and professionals of, and kind of, Andreas Antonopoulos and TuxEvent. They both really got skills and they know what's up. TuxEvent works a lot with BitPay. He helps them because he doesn't care. He just wants wide adoption. And so I'm going, okay, but what do I need at the luncheon? We have a 2-hour lunch, and we'll have it there. You can pay and get if you want, or go on your own. We're going to try and keep this thing really cheap. And I'm still tossing up numbers, but it comes down, I think I can get away with not lose money, depending on how much everybody wants to charge me and travel, and it's starting to add up. I mean, a lot of people want different things and help and trade for it, and I'm like, damn it, So if I can keep this thing under $5,000 out of my pocket, and I might recover some, yay, and or $3,000, oh my goodness, or I only had to invest a couple thousand dollars after all this is said and done, got some advertising at the NFL experience and the Super Bowl, and kind of, I come out way freaking ahead. So I'm like, I'm not that worried. So, but only if I can keep it a one-day thing. Our big cost on the Freedom Summits, because it's like a 2.5-day thing. It's hotel rooms for everybody. You got a gazillion speakers. You got all kinds of stuff. I mean, oh, man, we could do this a lot cheaper. So that's what we're going to do, is just do it Saturday. And we decided, I'm going, yeah, okay. We got some quality individuals here. Now, it will start today. Where I actually finally today, after we get the site up, I'll go and talk to the, ink the final contract and negotiation of, and the meals will be, and how we're going to, and all that crap I got to do. But it's done. So once that's done, then I will contact some of the exchanges and the wallets and all that kind of stuff, because really what I need is sponsorships. They may want to do that and so on, but then you're getting in the which one do you support over another? But in things like BitPay, or maybe they're starting to get some competition at CoinDesk, might be doing something, we'll see. But my big thing is I need their support for volunteers. So somebody come in. Airbits is busy with some other functions, thing that they're doing. But they'll get some people out to help with, because they, of course, want their wallet installed. Maybe we get some blockchain.info guys. And I know Mycelium got some interest in this. I already talked to Ross about it. So I'm just going, okay. So I just, more than, well, what do we need? And what do we got to buy? And what I'm going, that's not the goal here. The goal is to get people with some products to be able to explain it to people. We have already been seeding the ground here for 2 years or more. They have parties at our home. People come over with their parents and grandparents and so on, showing them, you know, what they're all excited about and meeting the people and so on. We had us helping them open up their wallet and putting some, giving them some to work with and being careful with it. We've had Davi came and spoke at Economic Discussion Group, which is like doctors and lawyers and judges and, you know, politicians and everything, and the Goldwater this and the Cato that and the Institute for Justice of whatever and the law firm of yada, yada, yada. And even one of the law firms actually took Bitcoin. So we're going, look, you know, telling everybody this is what this tech is. This is what's happening. This is how it's working. And now these people are like, yeah, you know, at least I might get me a little sum, or at least understand it, or be able to converse with my teenage son, grandson, know what the heck I'm talking about. And it's coming to merchants. When they start putting in the point of sale systems to be able to take Bitcoin, here we freaking go. The tech is coming. Once that started, you start putting in point of sale systems, it's coming. It's how regulated they're going to attempt to make it. So my question has always been, can they? Well, of course they can, wherever it touches the legacy system of you got a gold star on your file, you know, whatever, or you keep it off, or it becomes, you know, money laundering, whatever the heck that's supposed to be bad. I don't know. You know that, seriously, you used value of exchange without our permission or knowing what you did with it or why, or you exchange it from something to something, and that the king doesn't like that. Why? I mean, does it have to, why? I mean, if you're doing bad things, we'll go prosecute the bad things. But no, it's always to follow the money. Now they want, you know, follow the freedom. See, look, if they didn't have all this freedom, they couldn't have done that thing. BS. They need to do it no way. You know, they trade foot massages or something. I mean, you know, it is going to happen. You know if you've got 70 versions and you're short two, what do? You just go get two more. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, how you do it or what you pay them. You know, it's just, anyway. So what we're going to do is the BitcoinSummit.info. Now, it had other Bitcoin summits up there, and I don't care anyway, because I think .info worked well for what we want to do. Because what it's going to be is a workshop for newbies and merchants. So when we do this, it's going to be an explanation. Okay, we'll get you all caught up to speed of what the heck is this whole thing is about and what's going on. 2 hours of different kind of traits that you're looking for in wallets and kind of different things that are available from the perspective of Bitcoin Nut Bombs. Because they're, you know, I trust Davi's presentation skills. He has discovered PowerPoint. He's a graphics guy. So you have a lot of presentation skills and a lot of, you know, evaluation over the years and looking for, you know, the things that have been the problem. They've kind of been, you know, disinterested out here serving the concept, you know. So I'm going, I feel good about having them do a presentation. Then the actual wallets and the exchanges and the services and so on will be there in the afternoon along with a Bitcoin ATM. Not one that, you know, scans your freaking eyeball or anything. I mean, just I put money in, I get Bitcoin out, it gets on my account, done. Done. Just show you can do it. They'll go, well, you can't worry about, and somebody doesn't like, and somebody out there must be free and stuff. And I'm going, good. That's why, yeah, bring them on. I want to get the guys with the goods. I mean, just, I want to, ooh, can we get it on video? Okay? So, guys, and you know we're going to give a lot of attention to this. They go, done. Terry Floyd. He's like, man, it's rock and roll. I go, okay, let's do it. And if not them, we'll get somebody. We'll do it. We'll get us a machine there. Because they need to demonstrate the tech. When we come back, I want you to see we just created the special dish, start putting this together. It starts this week. You know, within like today, I got more contracts to sign. And then we're going to start contacting the exchanges and such and say, and the wallets and everything. All right, who wants to play? Nobody's getting special treatment. You know, I don't care. I just need you there to help the people. Phoenix will rise.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yes, and these are the signs that we're doing. This is when we did the pedal cab thing before. Okay. All right. Now, these go on the back of the pedal cabs when they're at these various different events that, you know, it's basketball, football, all the concerts, all that kind of stuff. You see these little pedal cabs, like three-wheel bicycle rickshaw, two-people hauling thing, you know. And some of them are different. They may haul four and such like that. Well, the two-person ones, they have a big space on the back that's open, and you're just and we've done this before. You just see Freedom's Phoenix everywhere. And all the politicians and the politicos and the people in the media, and they see it, and they're like, damn it. Ernie's everywhere. So we have some fun with that, and we get a deal, and it's just a good friend. If he doesn't have another marketer, he wants to have advertising on it anyway. So, and he's a support. We get a lot of help from a lot of people that are supporters. Excuse me, I got a little bit of air from my coffee here. So yummy. What we're going to do is we have the Bitcoin ones I showed you before that will go up. Now, they're going to be there kind of because I wanted to go a little bit before I start hitting the media. And this is the size. So it's that size. You know, it's a big, you know, I don't know, it's 24 by 32 or something on the back. Promoting the Bitcoin Summit. Now, these are the people that you want to promote it to. And what do we want to have? You know, there'll be things like, oh, you go to the BitcoinSummit.info and you'll start seeing stories. You know, things that would be of interest. Let's go ahead and check that out. I'll just show you. All right, go here and let's just do BitcoinSummit.info. Check it out and make sure it's working. You know, I didn't forward that. I did not forward that to that one. Okay, so let's go into... I think we just put it over at BitcoinSummit.info. Yeah, I had it going to our Freedom Summit page. Anyway, so let me go ahead and do this. I just told Derek, I said, forward it, man. Make it go work. Let's see if we can do this. BitcoinSummit.info. Now, see, that's the Freedom Summit. Now, I'll go ahead and show you the other one a little bit. But this right here is where we had our Freedom Summits, had all the information, the schedule, all the speakers and everything. And then also on each of the speakers, we put contact information for them for the media. So we're going, okay, so that's a good idea. Now, one thing that we wanted to do with the summit for the Bitcoin is we wanted to make sure that people knew that there was a summit going on, why, and some background information. Now, just this weekend, the Wall Street Journal came out with... See, I can go into the back end while we're working on it. Show you how to do it. This is how we do it. Okay, so what we're going to go ahead and do is Bitcoin Summit. Here we go. Here we have the BitcoinSummit.info, and what did we put up here? The Winklevoss twins looks to legitimize Bitcoin with a regulated U.S. exchange. Yeah, say no more. Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss think they have the answer to Bitcoin's rocky 2014 and tumbling value. A fully regulated Bitcoin exchange based in the United States. Well, of course, they're going to, of course. And I had this conversation a year ago in New York with some of the regulators and lawyers and all that kind of stuff. I was at the New York Bitcoin Exchange, of which there were plenty of these guys. And I said, look, to do what you guys want to do, you have to make the private exchange of Bitcoin illegal. You know, it's the only way that it's going to work. You can't you have to have all this, control when they can just go over and do it themselves. So I'm going, all right. But then here we had this story, the Wall Street Journal. All right. We're going to spend a little time on this article. Now, what happened was I saw this. I was looking for something. And as I'm looking for this, now here you have RoboCoin and all these FinCEN required, compliant ATMs. This is not what we're going to be doing. I mean, they may come and get one if they want to. I don't care. But I definitely wanted to have one that you didn't. The digital currency, this is Wall Street Journal, the digital currency known as Bitcoin is only 6 years old, and many of its critics are already declaring it dead. But such dire predictions miss a far more important point. Whether Bitcoin survives or not, the technology underlying it is here to stay. In fact, that technology will become ever more influential as developers create newer, better versions and clones. No digital currency will soon dislodge the dollar, but Bitcoin is much more than a currency. It is a radically new, decentralized system for managing the way societies exchange value. It is, quite simply, one of the most powerful innovations in finance in 500 years. Now, this is the Wall Street Journal. Now, when we put this up on the BitcoinSummit.info, what we'll do is we'll have this information up there for people to look at both sides. Can it be regulated? It should be regulated. It's not regulated. It can't never be regulated. So by doing this, we're going to have a summit where all of this is going to be discussed. That hasn't happened, in my opinion, from someone as a workshop to actually use it. I go to a lot of these. And it's always the fight up top. You go to San Jose a couple of years ago, you have the Darth Vader Bitcoin guys going, let me tax your Bitcoin. Let me track your Bitcoin. Get on the list. They're going, oh, go away. You're scaring off the venture capitalists. Hey, man, they need to be fully informed. And if they're giving you money without understanding what the hell is going on, they got other issues. So, you had this battle over whether it can be free people's money or not. Well, then there you go to New York and Ben Law, what's his jerk, is coming up and saying, oh, yes, and boss, you want to not SWAT team you? Well, then you got to do it this way and that way, and this is how it's going to be done. Then you have a lot of people in the space say, well, screw you. U.S. Need not apply. We'll go to somewhere else in the world, and we're going to free the people, and there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So life sucks. So this battle is going on, and oftentimes when you have people that advocate for the freedom aspect of a distributed everything, systems of information, of video, political dissidents, WikiLeaks for everybody, that kind of thing. You see this coming, and that's where the battle is. And it's going to be billions, billions of people that will have financial services available in a day or not. Well, I say they're going to, one way or another, get over it. And Goldman Sachs is just pissed off they didn't do it first. Okay? Now, if they can take the tech or alter the tech or get hold of the tech or outlaw the tech or whatever, monopolize their tech or something, they will. And you can hear, you see it all coming. Oh, we have shootings in Paris. A few days later, United Kingdom, you're not allowed to have cryptography. I'm sorry. Were they related? They're going to make it, take advantage of an opportunity. Can't have a situation go without taking advantage of it. I mean, it's that Rahm Emanuel thing. So I'm going, okay, this is where the battle is. If you get the man, whoever they, them, those are, has an interest in both sides of every transaction, where the money came from to this guy, where it goes to this guy, and who did it and how, and got a nice little ledger of it. When you go watch Enemy of the State, what was that, 10 years old? Will Smith, you go and watch this movie, you only wish it was half that bad. or twice that bad. You go, I wish, man, if it was only 10 times that bad, I would be happy. But it's a lot worse because they're able to network everybody and everything. And even if there isn't, you got 6 degrees of separation for everybody on the planet kind of thing anyway. I go, even if there isn't a connection, they make one. Why? Because it serves their interest to show how you're connected with, you know, whatever the heck. So, what are we going to do? I want to emphasize the tech and what are the options available now and likely in the future. And we're going to go ahead and get learnified from the top people in the learnification of everybody. So we're going to go ahead and do this for merchants and newbies. And we have, and once I start and I get the page all populated with the different stories, and we're just, I mean, hell, man, I just made the decision Thursday, you know, and kind of, you know, playing with it and getting some art and kind of, damn, we're done. Few days, done. That's what I done. Ernie Button got pushed, done. So what are we going to do? Now it's up to local activists and different people to start promoting it. We're going to try and get merchants there. They need to get there. I know who to get there. I was a mom-and-pa restaurant guy. I say, look, you need to understand this. You want to get some extra sales? You want to be part of the new digital currency, the new future, the new? You want to get, oh, and it's off the, they don't get the note cut and it's yours? You know that? You want to do that? Want to do that? I might get a couple people to go. And I keep it under what? I don't know. Under $100, under 75, under 50. And half of that comes back in Bitcoin on your wallet. You feel me? You want to see how it's done? Why is it always Arizona? Why does this stuff always come out of Arizona? I'll tell you why. Because we just did. Pioneer Southway. Yeehaw! BitcoinSummit.info. More stuff as we...
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, January 27th, 2015. Silver is trading at $17.96 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,284 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $265. Antiwar.com reports from Kurdish officials say that after 112 days of fighting, they have finally expelled the Islamic State from the contested border city of Kobani and that their YPG militias are now fully in control. YPG officials confirmed the takeover and the city's deputy foreign minister said there will be an official announcement of victory on Tuesday. The Islamic State has launched several offensives against Kobani and so far failed to take the city, the last major Kurdish holding to their west. The final death toll of the latest battle was 979 the Islamic State fighters and 324 YPG fighters. Kobani's value to the Islamic State is twofold, as it is both a border crossing into Turkey and would give the Islamic State contiguous control over a vast span of the border and increasingly near the city of Aleppo. For over 35 years, Robertson Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co. Ars Technica reports, prosecutors in the Silk Road drug trafficking trial have shown heaps of evidence from the laptop they seized from Ross Ulbricht, the man they allege is the kingpin behind the world's biggest drug trafficking website. What hasn't been known until Monday is what exactly led them to Ulbricht. A Homeland Security agent who testified last week had been investigating the site since it became famous in mid-2011, but it wasn't until September 2013 that he heard the name Ross Ulbricht. Days later, Ulbricht was arrested. Yesterday, IRS Special Agent Gary Alford took the stand and explained how he got onto Ulbricht's trail using one of the most basic tools on the internet, Google. Even though the Silk Road operated only on Tor, the part of the internet sometimes referred to as the dark net, Alford knew it had to be marketed somewhere. Alford said on the stand, "I figured it had to be on the regular internet so someone could tell you where to go." In June 2013, he searched for Silk Road and .onion, looking only 24 web references that predated January 31st, 2011, the very beginning of the market. That search led him to a post on BitcoinTalk.org called A Heroin Story. The post quoted a now-deleted post from a user named Altoid. "What an awesome thread," wrote Altoid. "You guys have a ton of great ideas. Has anyone seen Silk Road yet? It's kind of like an anonymous Amazon.com. I don't think they have heroin on there, but they are selling other stuff. They basically use Bitcoin and Tor to broker anonymous transactions." Alford searched for Altoid's post. The same user had posted in October 2011 that he was seeking the best and brightest IT pro in the Bitcoin community to be the lead developer in a venture-backed Bitcoin startup company. The recruitment post suggested sending an email to rossulbricht@gmail.com. Alford was only on the stand for about 90 minutes.
Okay, we got you?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. And
you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Are you the gentleman I talked to at CES or no?
You probably talked to Matt or I. Yeah, we were both there.
Okay, cool. And which one of you were the one that did whatever? You, him, both, what?
Oh, I was the one who basically like just designed the hammock, and Matt kind of had the idea for it.
Okay, what we're going to do is kind of, I'm interested in, we're going to promote the hammock and everything. I think it was cool. But okay. The main thing that we're going to do is the process. I had a guy did a my type keyboard, a fold out silicon kind of, it was freaking what I've been looking for forever. And he spent $400,000 trying to develop this thing over 30 years. He's a double engineering degree from MIT in engineering and a lawyer.
I wish I had those degrees.
$400,000 to find out they only needed about $10,000 in a Kickstarter, okay? So I'm going, you guys kind of bypassed that $400,000 thing. So we want to talk about the process. The product's going to sell itself. I get it. I want one. Give me.
I mean, you saw it at CES when people sat down in it. They just loved it.
So we're going to go ahead and talk about the process, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence. I'm here in Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, check this out. Check this out. The foot hammock. Very simple design. Very simple thing. You know, it's very useful and it's very cool. And at that Consumer Electronics Show, they just had, you know, a demonstrative model there. They put it on the table and we're just playing video games and watching whatever, you know, young men watch in their dorm room. And we're going, ooh, that looks like a reloading table there. I recognize that. Ah, you didn't think I'd see that little thing. Okay. So what we're going to do is talk about the ability to use Kickstarter and foot hammock. What better way to do that? And it's to show how someone with a good idea doesn't need a gazillion dollars, because what did we have? The gentleman that had the MyType keyboard, he's a double engineering grad from MIT. He's an attorney. He has a lot, and over the years, he had spent $400,000 to what? You know, to find out that he only needed like $10,000. So we're going to go skip to the end, straight to the $10,000 guys, and talk about this cool idea. But it's more than just the idea. It's bringing it to fruition. It's manufacturing. It's, you know, coming up with solutions. It's finding, you know, what is a possible and different models. I mean, and they're not even really shipping yet until probably this summer. So I found this fascinating story. So I wanted to go ahead and talk to these guys. So the gentleman we have up now, are you Brent?
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I am.
Brent. Okay. So Brent Murray, this is, he's along with, tell us what role you played in the foot hammock. How did this get going?
Well, so Matt and I, we were roommates down at BYU, and we wanted to come up with an idea that would change people's lives. It took us a little while to come up with an idea. It's like a 3-month, maybe 4-month process.
Oh, so you didn't even know what the idea. We just want to, you know, change people's lives by having them have less money in our thing, and we get their money, right?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, so anyway, so it's a, you know, an enterprise. So you come up with, all right, let's come up with an idea. So your goal was to come up with a cool idea to begin with. I mean, you hadn't even had the idea yet.
Yeah, that was our idea. I mean, both of us really like Shark Tank. We watched that quite a bit. Matt watched it more than I did. So we just wanted to come up with an idea that would, you know, change, you know, people's lives a little bit. Because that's what we want to do. We want to be entrepreneurs, and that's the kind of people we were, really hands-on kind of guys. So, I mean, for about 3 months, we'd come home, like, every single day from class and be like, well, what about this idea? What about this idea? And we would always just bounce ideas off each other all the time. And there's a couple times where we thought we had some really good ideas and then realized it's already been done. And then Matt was like, because Matt was using his printer for the longest time underneath his desk to put his feet on, to, like, raise his feet up. And he came to me and he was just like, why don't we like make something we can put our feet in underneath our desk? And I was like, oh, I mean, I guess we could do that. I was like, don't they have those little blocks you put up underneath your desk for your feet? He was like, yeah. He's like, but I'm looking for something a little bit better, something you can like put your feet in and like engulf your feet, something that's comfortable and like fabric. And I was like, all right. So we kind of eventually got to the idea of just putting a hammock underneath the desk because hammocks are comfortable. So I was like, let's just make one for your feet. And so we looked for the idea on Google, and we tried to find if it actually existed anywhere else, and we didn't see anything at the time.
So the first order of business is foot hammock dot whatever's mine. It's mine, and you go, nobody has it, morons. You know, so they're going to have elbow hammock and shoulder hammock and neck hammock now.
We looked up a lot of our other ideas, and they've already existed, and there's tons of people doing them. So I mean, it was kind of sad because we were just like, man, everything's already been done. What are we going to find that no one's done yet? It's really hard.
While you were sitting there surfing with your feet up on boxes underneath your desk, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start with the inkling of the idea. So you guys are sitting there, and one of you went, you know what? Tell me about that inspiration process.
Well, like I said, we come home every day, and it was tough to come up with new ideas. We'd look for things in our lives that we found could be done easily or more efficiently, I guess. Things that would make it quicker for us to get ready for school, or something that would make it easy for us to learn or more comfortable somewhere, or just something, some little task that can help you get through your day every single day that other people might have the same problem with, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. That's how it starts.
That was kind of like our basis for thinking, because we just want to find something that people don't know that they need, I guess.
Yeah. I need, okay? I need. I need. Now, this was, you had already been doing, because I guess you're gamers a lot or whatever you're watching on.
Yeah, I game quite a bit. Matt games more than me, but yeah. I do sit at my desk for about 4 hours to 5 hours a day.
Now, describe the product and how the idea, I mean, it's still, there was a, hey, what we should do. Tell me about that moment.
Well, it really, I guess, it kind of really wasn't a, hey, this is what we should do. It kind of built on itself. I mean, I guess that moment was like him coming to me and being like, we should make something you can put your feet in underneath your desk. That was kind of the moment. And I was like, all right, well, let's try to think about something there.
And then once we found out, I guess, the hammock didn't exist, like, on the internet, then it got really exciting, and then it was kind of like, well, let's start making this.
Okay, now, to protect the idea, are you looking at, you know, like patents or any of that stuff, intellectual property is a big thing with you guys, or no?
At this point, we really didn't look at any, we didn't really do a patent search until we filed our own provisional patent last year. As soon as we filed our own provisional patent, we did a patent search and stuff like that, and we were fine. There was nothing in there. So,
you know, is that, well, I'm glad in our society, anybody comes up with a good idea, somebody, oh, and you're not allowed, and we sue because we filed out the right paperwork, yeah, and it's ours now. And I guess a protective thing, are you, you know, you're going to be jealousy defending your patent when somebody comes up with their Ronco foot of elevator nader thing, you know, or something? Or
well, it was actually already, so we actually filed our provisional patent back in February of, or I think it was, yeah, February last year. And there was actually a company that came out, I think it was in Korea, they named it the Foot Hammock. It was F-U-U-T instead of F-O-O-T. So it was kind of disturbing when we saw that come out, and it came out about 3 or 4 months after we filed our provisional patent. So we were kind of like, someone's already scamming us, someone's already like seen our ideas and stuff like that. We don't know what really happened or how someone else came up with the exact idea that we had. But their attachment method was just a little bit different than ours, so I guess it made it a different product, technically.
Yeah, no, I mean, these guys, they scan your brain that you put on paper at the government. I mean, they're going, thank you for this idea.
And, you know, everyone, because we had a Facebook page up, and anyone can see that, so it's like, oh, that's a cool idea, I'm going to make one for myself.
Yeah, no, you got you. You know, that's what they did. They asked Elon Musk why he wasn't filing patents on his rocket engines, and he goes, because I'm the only customer. He goes, what the hell, you want to deconstruct it and do it, peace out, I don't care. Hell, I give out my patents on my electric cars, I don't care, you know? Yeah. So it's first to market, oftentimes, what's going to, you know, get you
it
going.
It is, and it's a big marketing game. With a business like ours, I mean, it's a lot of branding and stuff like that too, because if you can get your logo out there and your brand name out there, people are going to buy your product.
Okay, when we come back, you know, we'll get more of the story, because then once you got the idea and you get the kind of patent, you're not worried about the, you know, the Korean, Chinese, whatever the heck coming and taking it, you know, then you go, all right, now we got to do it and like prototype it and make it and mass produce it and sell it. We'll find out.
How many lawyers does it take to change a light?
Don't care. Okay, the one thing that I just want you to keep in your mind is this chronology, you know, of how now we got the idea, we got the provisional patent. Now we're like, I mean, before you even did that, did you immediately do that, or did you make some kind of like a strap prototype hammock kind of see if we want to do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, before we filed for the provisional patent, We made a couple prototypes already before that, because we needed something that was relatively the final product before we, you know, did a patent for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did about, I think it was probably 3 to 4 months of just making prototypes on our own. I mean, we went to DI and bought a sewing machine so we could sew the hammocks ourselves. So that was interesting. It didn't really work out as well as I wanted it to, but it got the point across for as far as a hammock for your feet.
Okay, hold on just a second. Zooming in a little bit more. Move it over this way. Not so much dead space over here. Make sure I can see that a little bit better. It's been changed. We're just getting our video camera thing done. We broadcast on a network also. And okay. Donna told you that our conversation in the break is recorded too, so don't, you know, get too stupid.
I'll probably just drink some water or something.
Hold on. What? Okay, so she didn't tell you. Anyway, anything you say during the breaks are recorded, so just in case. The one thing that I wanted to make sure as we go through the chronology of getting it started, mm-hmm. then, you know what help, how much money you had to come up with, you're going to grandpa, you know, hey, a little something for the team here, you know, whatever, you know, this process. And the one thing is that the cost of where you could have even saved even more money. I mean, I don't know if you could have or not, you know, I mean.
I don't know either. I mean, we did this really efficiently.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about that very thing. And it's just, I hate to see someone someone in this situation. My father came up with some little invention phone thing back in the day, and it was just a consumer where to hang the whatever back in the 70s. And I remember going through the process with him. He did his patent stuff and all that, and that kind of occupied his time for a couple of years. And it was just, you know, everybody else makes money except the guy with the idea. Yep. You know, and I'm going, wow, this is the level of entry. And then, and we get to the point where you make the die for the part of then, and that's $8,000, which is like real money back then. So I'm going, now it's just, hey, I'll just 3D print it and get my 12-year-old to do it. You know, so this is, it's changed everything. You can see why I'm so interested in this process, because when you have a gentleman like we had before that did the and this is a high electronic, nice rubber, silicon rubber touchpad, kind of just folded out, and it's a keyboard for your smartphone, your tablet. It has turned my tablet into my computer now, and I've been looking for this. I saw it, stopped, get here. 70-year-old guy lives here in Phoenix, Arizona, Buckeye area, out in the boonies here, retired. Been doing this for 32 years or something, $400,000, just so he get to a position to find out he needed $10,000-$15,000.
Yeah, sometimes you'd be surprised. You really don't need too much money to get your
idea. You know this now.
Aid.
But these guys are in the traditional legacy system of how it's supposed to be done. And it's all this monopoly, you're not allowed, and you didn't get permission slip, and now it costs you $200,000 thing. You know, this has changed. And when I saw what you guys did and how fast it did, and your Kickstarter on your foot hammock went stupid the day I saw you, you know, I'm going, wow, you know, this is a good story. So this is why I'm motivated to do this, other than, you know, I want one. So, you know.
All right, we'll be back. Make sure you get one.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, welcome back to Declare Your Independence. We're getting everything all turned on here. It's weekend. Okay, we take Mondays off for the grandkids, you know, and I you know, I like to try and show them they got cool ideas, because kids have great ideas. I mean, they're just, you know what we could do? I go, that's an awesome idea. Let's go see if they make that. And they do it, and you kind of know of the product or something. Wow, what would you make it better? And do kind of, and then sometimes they come up with a brand new spanky idea. I'm wondering, you know, what happens when you have the idea. You just kind of have a 12-year-old catted up. You send it to some other 13-year-old, you know, using Cashew. You know, I met a guy at Consumer Electronics Show, had Matter and Form, which is a 3D scanner that goes into, you can 3D print it, and you go into a brokerage kind of thing, and you say, hey, I got this file. Who wants to print it? Oh, and I need some fibers, a carbon fiber, to strengthen in these layers and kind of give the flexibility in certain directions of the whatever, the mount to put underneath the table for the foot hammock kind of deal. Who wants to mass produce or make the prototype and whatever, or some 13-year-old, I got that 3D printer that does that extrusion process of the one of the multi, kind of boom, done. And then it's sent to you. 12-year-olds are going to rule the world, okay? Because it's imagination. And the technology and capability of doing this is just going to be awesome. Foot hammock. Okay, foot hammock. Now, what we're talking to is Brent Marini. He's telling us the story, and I want to get right back to this. So, Brent, you come up with a concept. You do the patent thing. But before you even do the patent thing, you kind of got to have something to patent, you know, a working concept. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so you want to have a product that's going to be as closely resembles the final product that you're wanting to, you know, sell to people. Because you want to make sure that your provisional patent or whatever patent you decide to go with is going to, like, closely resemble, I guess, you know, final product.
And okay, so there are requirements for this patent process, but as soon as you do that, all of a sudden you got South Korea knockoff of We Made It Up. And I'm going, well, you know that they're just using the openness of our system, is it's a public document, and they go and they go, ooh, that's a good idea. We're looking at all of the new patents that were filed today, and then they come up with whatever. This is what's happening, right?
It is, yeah, it kind of is. And even if you do patent your stuff, I mean, it's kind of a gray area there as far as who can copy it and people can do pretty much whatever they want with it these days. So, unless it's something really, like, I guess, like bigger, maybe like a circuit board or something like that, it's kind of hard to just go around and change the design and get the same function out of it. But with something as simple as the foot hammock, I mean, you can just change the attachment method, or you can change how the straps are underneath it. You can change the shape of it, and it could technically be a different product, and you could still sell it.
Yeah, until you got big giant law firm that says you can't. I mean, you know, it's just a game. All right. So you go through this process. You have a prototype. You do the filing. Now we're going to divert our attention from paperwork, which is stops about 93% of the people. So you go through all that crap. You know, then you have the actual all right, now we need to what? You know, I mean, this has been over a year for you guys, right?
Almost. It'll be a year in February.
Okay, so you got done in less than a year, which is kind of amazing. So, yeah, I got to ask, just right off the top, Consumer Electronics Show, I can see kind of the people, they spend a lot of time behind their desk going, yeah, this is a place to go. And that was kind of, boom, squirrel. I mean, that just really, you know, took me aside. I mean, but immediately I saw the connection. But the thing is, what made you think of going there, and how much is it to get a booth there?
So it's about $1,000 to get a booth there, which isn't terribly too bad.
No, but, I thought it'd be worse than
we're
that.
Working with a company that's local down in Provo, Utah. It's called the Phone Soap Company, and they've kind of been helping us through all of this.
What'd you call it? Phone soap?
Yeah, it's phone soap. They make like UV sterilizers and like sanitation things for your cell phones. It's pretty cool, and they're actually making some for their tablets too now. So they're hoping to put them in hospitals and stuff like that.
So it's like Star Trek, you just scan your hands and you UV sanitize them?
It's like you put like a little, no, it's like you just put your phone in this kind of a tray looking thing. And then it's got like a little like flap that opens up on it, and you close it, and then it sanitizes your phone in like 5 minutes or so.
Oh, okay. So it's like a UV thing for my toothbrush.
It's like UV, it's UV sterilizer is what it is.
Got it. Okay, got it.
So that's what they did. And we kind of reached out to them because they were, you know, they had an idea for their product, you know, the UV sanitizers, and they went through the same thing we were about to go through. And we kind of reached out to them. We're like, hey, you guys want to help us out? And they were like more than happy to help us out with all of our like foot hammock needs and all that kind of stuff. And they're the ones who actually were going to CES with their products. And then they invited us to come down there with them to launch our foot hammock. So it worked out perfectly.
Okay,
so
wait.
That's kind of how we got invited to it, because we didn't know we were really going to be going until about 2 weeks until the show started. So we were scrambling around trying to print more hooks and get some hammocks done and, you know, make sure we had the heated one working and all that stuff there. So it was a crazy 2 weeks.
But okay, now wait a minute. The mounts, you 3D printed those?
Yeah, we did 3D print those, and those are for the prototypes, but they're going to be injection molded for the final product.
I know, but that's amazing. In a pinch, we need to gotta have them kind of in a couple days, and we got it, and we're done. You know,
yeah,
that's
like,
awesome.
Literally, I can get like 4 hooks printed in a day easily. So anytime.
Yeah, but when you need 4,000 in a day, that's probably not the way to do it.
No, yeah, 3D printing is not the way to do it for mass production, because you can just have one mold that'll do, you know, thousands of hooks.
Wow.
In injection molding.
Okay, so the injection molded part, I mean, that's part of your process, manufacturing, scaling up. Who's doing that? How'd you make that process come to fruition?
So right now, there's a manufacturer in Taiwan that we're going to be working with probably. We're not sure yet, though, for sure. But they're going to be the ones doing the injection molding. And we needed the Kickstarter money, the $15,000, to pay for the mold.
Yeah, how did that $15,000 thing go for you? Tell me. Now, you launched it that day at Consumer Electronics Show, didn't you?
Yeah, 24 hours. Actually, 24 hours and 4 minutes, we hit $15,000.
Okay, so in 24 hours, what are you at now?
I haven't even checked it today. I think we're around 86,000 or more.
So you got enough money? You guys good?
Yeah, you know, we're good. We definitely have enough to make it now, so everyone can get their hammocks, which is nice.
Okay,
so now we'll have a little bit of extra money to put into some, you know, research for the hammocks, and hopefully get some, like health benefits and studies done like that for it. So it'll be nice.
Well, packaging. I mean, packaging that we had, it was $20,000 that this gentleman was showing me just to get the packaging of the packaging of the package. And I'm going, you know, I think it's called the plastic bag. I mean, anyway, so, I'm, you know, but the point is that I'm going, it's just stupid amounts of money. And I know people that do packaging design.
There's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of companies who do, like, really, really expensive packaging for a product that's not that expensive. And I don't see the point in doing it.
It's all about packaging, man. But, you know, you can get it done a lot cheaper.
So you can. You can get it done really cheap. And you kind of have to look at your product and be like, you know, I'm not shipping an electronic component here, so it doesn't need to be packaged in a really, really thick cardboard or foam package.
So you're going to put it in a bag with a paper cardboard top of hang it on the whatever, right?
Yeah.
That done. Done. We're going to show you more pictures, you know, when we come back. Oh, see?
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
And you can sell the foot hammock to both sides. Oh, you're goose-stepping out there, got your feet tired? After a year of pressing of the masses, you need to relax and play some Call of Duty and get some more killing in? Well, you just put your feet up and relax. Oh. And you can get it foot warm. Oh, and you can get it kind of the nice little cover over and keep you all nice and toasty. Oh, after a day of tyrannizing. Yeah, something that everybody wants. Yeah, I'm just looking for an excuse to have that song. Anyway, so this is something that I want to walk us through so that we know what we can do. This is, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for us to be able to make money now that we've never had before. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all you have to do is just have a really good idea, you know, and they came up with a good idea. They were looking for good ideas. There's a plethora of ideas, a cornucopia of concepts that are out there for us to be able to do. And I want to walk this through because you may have one, and it's really great that last week we had a gentleman, 70 years old, goes through this whole process, spends $400,000 to find out that he needed, like, none, okay? And he gets done. Well, now these young men, they come in and said, now we're going to, you know, wow, we got to go to the Consumer Electronics Show. We don't have the injection mold. That's no problem. I'll just go over to Fred's over here, and we'll just 3D print what we need for the show. It's all good. But there's some other parts of it, too. You had the sewing stuff. How did you come up with the actual product itself? You know, mom helped something, or you guys learned how to sew?
Well, I taught myself how to sew. YouTube.
Ah, score. You know, yep. I did, we had to sew a cover. I bought my wife a nice embroiderizing kind of for, you know, birthday, Christmas something years ago of a nice Brother sewing machine. And I was the first one to use it a few years later sewing the cover for my aquaponic geodesic dome. I mean, going, I will figure it out, you know. So you guys figured it out. Now, your pattern, did you, you got some pattern that you gave to a company for them to copy, or did they come up with their own design? Tell me about that process.
Yeah, so actually I used a seamstress, a local seamstress here in Salt Lake where I live,
And we actually kind of finished. I made the best one I could make myself, which wasn't that great. And then I brought it to her, and she just kind of, I kind of told her what I wanted it to look like, and drew it out on paper. Like, I told her, like, you know, I want these seams to be hidden. I want these zippers over here on this part, and I kind of gave her a bunch of dimensions and stuff. It took us a couple times to get it right, to get it perfect, but, you know, I mean, it took, that was probably the longest time, actually. It took about 4 months just to get that perfect. And then once we got it perfect, it was pretty much, okay, here's our final product. Now we need to, now we just need someone to copy this, or our manufacturers to copy this product, you know, thousands of more times, because this is what we want it to look like.
Okay, tell me the process on your deal. You know, I'm me asking knowingly. As you're going through being a young man, you're what, 20, 23? 21. I'm sorry?
21.
21 years old, going to an experienced seamstress of how you want her to do what you want to do, and it's 4 months of listening to that damn kid. He doesn't know that kid, and kind of the kid. And you go, look, I know what I want. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to do it. Yeah. How much of that 4 months was, you know, drug out that wasn't really necessary because they just didn't listen to you?
Probably 3 months of it.
In that way. Okay, so finally you were assertive enough and you said, no, this is what I want. They're going, well, that's going
to
be hard. Yeah,
it was really hard. This was the time when I was ready to give up, too. I mean, if there was a time where I was going to give up, it was going to be this time, because I was going back down there probably 3 or 4 times a week, being like, all right, have you finished yet? And they're like, no, we haven't finished. And I was like, okay, I'll come back later. And then you kind of have to be forceful a little bit. You kind of have to tell them tell them they got to start doing their work, because or else you're not going to pay them, and then they get moving.
You know, this is one thing that, you know, there's so many places where great ideas and concepts and empires, you know, are thwarted. That's just being assertive. You know, Steve Jobs butthead kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I was like, I don't want to be rude. I mean, obviously, I don't want to be disrespectful, but, I mean, you know, that's their business. That's what they do. So, I mean, that's kind of the way I looked at it. I was like, well, this is what I need. You said you can do it, so can you do it or not?
You know, I guarantee freaking to you, there's some Oriental Malaysian country of a group of, they love to do it. They'll give you 14 iterations of exactly whatever it is that you want the next day. Okay, this is what has changed: the globalization of competition, and people here better start getting with it, man, or young guys like you are just going to go to Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, it was costing me $50 per hammock to just sell them here.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, I mean, the hammocks would have been very expensive if we went and sewn them in U.S.
Yeah, but they would have been American-made.
Well, if, you know, if you can pay $150 for a hammock.
Okay, so then you have, you guys, free market just turns everybody into libertarians. Okay, when you go to the people that are now agreeing to mass-produce this, what's your cost got down to?
I'm not actually sure what the cost is going to be.
Is it under $10?
It's actually going to be close to 10 and maybe more with the hooks and stuff like that and the tape.
So $10-$15, you're kind of, you know, so
yeah, we're making a little bit of money. We're making enough to cover, you know, obviously what we put into it, and to make a little bit of money and to cover whatever costs we need later on. But, I mean, I really don't know how much money we're going to be making off of it. I mean, I just want to try to stay in the positive numbers. I don't want to have to be paying for the business to run.
Yeah, no. Charge enough. That's why you got to get your cost down. But the thing is,
you want to make sure that you're trying to, I guess my advice is, you want to make sure you're at least making 50% margin on whatever you're selling, so that you can
cover all the problems.
Yeah, so you can cover all the manufacturing and the shipping, and if you have any problems, because, I mean, you're going to have something, you're going to have quality control problems.
You got returns. I'm hit.
Parts going to get reworked. You're going to have returns, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to have, like, storage fees, and there's a bunch of hidden fees that you'll find out that are going to come up that are going to frustrate you to no end, and you're going to have to pay them no matter what.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. You know, the thing is,
the patent, too. I mean, it took us 3 months just to get the patent filed right, and they sent it back and sent it back and sent it back, because
you know, you can, you know, dot her I's or cross her T's because it has to be absolutely perfect. And it's like, oh, it's $50 to resubmit it now, and it's $50 to resubmit it again, and it's $50 another time to resubmit it. So, I mean, we spent a lot of money just trying to get the provisional patent right.
You know, the experience that you had in doing that process, you know, is a value to people doing this kind of thing. Of course, it's a value to you. The next idea, the next, you know, armchair swinging from kind of whatever thing, you know, comes up. And see, the reason I'm familiar with I have a sky chair. You know, it's kind of a single chain that you sit and swing in. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I see, love that thing.
Cool.
You know, my kids got that for me. Father's Day, like, I don't know, a decade ago at a Renaissance festival or something. And your foot hammock is very similar to the accessory that's added to that to put your feet up. So I know the benefit of I'm going, oh, heck yeah, I know what this is. You know, it's like my sky chair for under my desk. I'm going, score. Now if you can get the sky chair to hang from my seat, that's a good freaking idea.
That's
my next.
Cool.
That's my Kickstarter. I'm doing Donna. Okay,
it was just, I don't know how practical it'd be, but
maybe not. It is comfortable though.
Oh, I bet it's super comfortable.
A sky chair is just like a chair hammock that you got a back and it just. But the way it's designed, it hangs from a tree branch or a rafter or your ceiling or whatever.
Yeah.
You combine that with this foot hammock. It kind of has one kind. Oh!
You won't have anything attached to the ground. You'll just be hanging.
That's awesome! See? Already a new product. All right. More details of how it brought this to market. We keep track of it when we come back.
My name is Jacob Horn.
Yeah, see, this is going good. This is good information. And as much as I like the product, you know, it's the process that you went through and just not quitting, you know, getting this done.
It really is just not quitting. I mean, it's just never giving up. Even when you're really discouraged and you don't want to do it anymore, which, I mean, I'll be honest, that happened to me. I didn't want to do it anymore for a little bit there. But, I mean, I don't know why we kept going. Matt and I just kept motivating each other. We're just like, look, this is going to be really big one day. And we keep telling each other that, and it really helps.
Well, I mean, did you feel that it was? I mean, did you, like, it's big.
We thought it was going to be really big. I mean, we knew it was a good idea. We didn't know how good of an idea it was. I mean, obviously, we can't predict how many people were going to buy it, but, I mean...
So how many have you sold already?
We're expecting it to be pretty good, though.
How many have you sold already?
Over 2,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Damn. So how long before you're going to have, you're up the production and start sending out?
We should be shipping in June, just so that we can get everything, you know, just going smooth and making sure the product is going to be exactly the way we want before it ships. Because we won't ship it unless it's exactly the way we want it to be.
Yeah, you got to have just to pay the guy just to inspect them.
Yeah, I mean, we've already had some prototypes come back from the factory already, and they've been looking good. And that's actually the one we had at CES, too. So people were using the final product at CES.
You know, I didn't get to try the other people were sitting in the foot warmed one or something.
Oh,
or the
thing is amazing.
You know, that especially, you know, here in Phoenix, it's not as amazing. But I mean, in a lot of places,
need a cooled one probably.
We need a pack to put ice in. But the thing is that, you know, I can see how awesome that would be. You're at home, you're relaxing, your feet are cold, you put them in there, you're comfortable, they're warm, awesome.
I always use mine, so I love it because I get cold feet.
Now and it's electrically heated, isn't it?
Yep, it's electric.
Wow. Okay.
Just a little heating pad. That's all it is.
All right.
Simple.
Well, the thing, it's simple until you have to have someone halfway around the world sew it in. You know.
Well, actually, it's not sewn in. It actually is a zipper on. There's a really long zipper on the bottom side of it. You actually just slide it in.
Really? Do you?
Yes,
you can
it's
buy
removable,
it
so you can machine wash the hammock because it'll eventually get smelly with your smelly feet. You know?
No. Yeah, that's a good thing. I didn't even think of. Might want to throw a towel over.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. We go in this last segment. Make sure we'll start off with you pimping the website and how to get it and the Kickstarter and all that kind of stuff. But We could probably, run the Kickstarter in the background. Let me see if I can do this.
Yeah, it's just the foot hammock on Kickstarter.
Yeah, we have it up here. That's how I know you're at 85,199, and we refresh it and see if anybody's bought anything since then. 85,199. Okay, 12 days to go. Oh, okay. Well, you're already sold over 2,000. Wow. Okay. Well, you guys got skills. All right, let me pull this.
The average American worker spends 6 hours a day at their desk. The average gamer spends an additional 7 hours a week at their desk. The average under desk temperature, a chilly 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Yet this is what we do with our feet.
Okay, I'm going to bring the sound down and we'll just run it in the back. But you can remember some of the stuff that's being discussed here, so let's go ahead and we'll do that while it's going. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, come on. Johnny Quest! Nobody ever gets it. Johnny Quest. You go, who's Johnny Quest? Okay, well, whatever. We'll worry about that later. Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is we... my generation. Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is I want to run the Kickstarter here.
Okay.
And we'll just let it go in the background, and you can kind of just describe what you're doing. Because one thing that we didn't emphasize enough is the heated one. And now in Phoenix, that may not be as big a deal, but around the freaking planet, to have comfortably, you're at your desk, you're at home, you're at work, you take your feet, your shoes off, you put in there just freaking, that's where all the cold is next to the wall, down at the bottom of the room. And it's like, damn, so what was your solution to that?
For the heated one?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to use, you ever seen those, like, rice packs? I guess, like, you stick in the microwave?
Yes, absolutely. Flaxseed.
Yeah, that was actually my first idea for it. Using, like, a microwavable heat pack that you can put in the hammock. And then it got to, because we didn't want any electronics in the hammock. We wanted this product to be so simple. I mean, anyone would understand it. But then I was like, people use heated pads too and electric heating blankets. I mean, most desks have an electrical outlet underneath it anyways because there's a computer there or a lamp or something. So I was like, well, we might as well just put an electric blanket inside of the hammock and instead of having to run to the microwave every half hour to heat up your feet.
Okay, well, that sounds like we're seeing scenes of this. And I didn't get to try the heated hammock one because they wouldn't give it up. So, this is...
People signed it. They didn't want to get out of it.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And the fact that you can, kind of cinch it up to put it up underneath and out of the way, or you just kind of, have it sized to go down to wherever you want, and you have some kind of elastic in there. What's the elastic for?
Oh, the elastic is along the front and the back edges. So what we realize is if you have a rigid strap that goes along those edges there, it creates this invisible line in the middle of the hammock where it just isn't comfortable for your feet. So we needed something that conformed to your feet really, really well. So we just used 1-inch. It's a pretty industrial strength nylon woven fabric that can stretch a little bit, so it gives it that, it gives the hammock the extra give and the ability to form around your feet better.
The top that kind of folds over your feet, is that where the heat is in that top?
No, the heat is actually the heat pad is actually in the inside the actual hammock, and then that flap just attaches with using magnets on the back side, the under back side of it, and then it comes around to the top. And it just attaches or snaps on with little magnets, and that holds the heat in because the heat rises from the bottom and then gets trapped by the top of the pouch.
Okay. When you go into manufacturing for this and you have them, they're giving you a capacity of how many a month or day or something. What are they saying?
Well, right now, we could probably, I don't know the exact number, but I know it's a crazy amount we could do every month. It's
thousands. We could probably do thousands.
Thousands
a month.
Okay, so has this interrupted your studies?
Yeah, I'm not going to school at the moment.
Oh, score! Okay, Peter Thiel, give you 100,000? Now, this is... All right. When we were at Consumer Electronics Show, a friend of ours has a... it's called the HOPE system, H2OPE, water, power, and purification and energy. That's what it is. And he went to the Shark Tank open audition that they had there, and it was... like hundreds, if not thousands, of people in line to show them their gizmo doodad, you know?
Jeez, I didn't even know they were there.
Oh, yeah. It was Thursday morning at 7 a.m. and or Wednesday, whatever. It was at 7 a.m. one of those days, and we went there and just started, did a little bit of show and took some pictures. And, man, it's just rocking and rolling and whatnot. But you don't really need Shark Tank, do you? I mean, you kind of sharked yourself.
We were thinking about doing it, but... You know, we didn't want to have any investors. You know, we didn't want to have any overhead costs or anything like that. So it was such a simple product. Matt and I just kept telling ourselves, you know, well, let's just do as much as we can by ourselves, and you know, and see how far that gets us. If we need to take a small business loan or something, then we will. If we know the product's going to be successful.
Well, how much money did you guys have to come up with?
I think altogether it was probably, I think it was around $10,000 to $13,000 each.
Billions of dollars to some people. So where did you come up with $10,000 each to go through this process over a year?
So I mean, my parents helped me out a lot, and I think Matt's parents helped him out a lot too. So I kind of took parent loan.
Okay, well, what's their? Oh, and you drop out of school. I'm sure they're just really happy about that.
I don't know. They seem to be okay with it now.
Okay, so they were. Yeah. Well, how long were they not okay with it?
I don't know. My parents are pretty easygoing. They kind of just let me do whatever.
All right. So they know me.
I'm a hard worker. So.
Okay, so they're like investing. They go, we're going to invest in Brett, you know, and kind of, so what's their cut? You know, it was a 3%, you know, APR loan, or was it 30% of you're a billionaire in our retirement? I mean,
They didn't even ask for anything. They're not even asking me to pay them back, but I'm going to pay them back for it anyways. So.
Awesome. Well, you can see the education you got just going through this process of how business really works.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I applaud your parents not worrying about some, you know, degree, government permission. You're allowed to work. Kind of said that you've pledged allegiance for an extra 4 years every day or something. That just doesn't mean anything to me. But what you guys have accomplished and done is that all how many tens of thousands of dollars. You know what? They saved money.
Exactly.
I think so. You know, this is the next step is what? You know, packaging is not going to be a big deal for what you kind
of
got.
It's not that big of a deal anymore. Next step is really just fine, just like tweaking the final product and just like I'm still doing, you know, some testing on it right now and making sure that it's 100% bulletproof before it goes out the door because, you know, I want it to work. I don't want it to fail.
Okay, and your partner's name is what?
Matt Hume.
Okay, so Matt, his family is supportive of him as yours are of you?
Yep.
Does your family know each other?
Actually, our families haven't ever met. My parents have met Matt, though. My parents are from North Carolina. That's where I'm originally from.
And Matt's from where?
He's from here in Utah.
Okay. So you go to BYU. They have, you know what? My sister, the whole side of my mother's family, my grand, they were the Lehigh invasion of the Mormon community into Mesa here and so on. I'm Mormoned up, man. I get it. Yeah. You know, and that is an enormous market. They see some guys from BYU doing something cool and kickstarting, kind of, boom, the call goes out and everybody buys.
Yeah, it's really easy to get an idea set in motion, especially with that kind of environment down there.
There's so much support for people.
They'll do
exactly
all your
like
social media work for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going, you guys already got it going on. Well, I want to, you know, pimp it out here because I tell you, man, this is something that because my main desk that I use is just a fold-out card table. I have a bunch of, you know, everything else is on everything. I just like the big, you know, I just use that, and it's perfect for that. Just boom. Now, the thing is that to mount the mounts there, it's just a double-sided, he's Velcro kind of something, boom, and it just goes on, right?
It's not a Velcro. It's just a double-sided tape, and it's just got a really, really high bond strength on it. And it sticks to most surfaces really, really well, and it should be able to hold up, you know, about 100 pounds. So it's really, really strong.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy for you. So after you do your July shipping of product, are you counting on just Kickstarter, or are you starting a new banner ad all over the freaking... I've done this before.
So what we're doing is we're going to have our own website set up, which we're currently developing right now during the Kickstarter. It's going to be thefoothammock.com, and we're probably going to do like, you know, Google Ads and ad placement and stuff like that just on the internet, because it's going to be an internet marketing business.
Well, you maybe, you know, on the site of the gamers.getmygameshere place or something, you know?
Yeah, and gamer sites, you know, YouTube, you know, just wherever a lot of people go, so we can get a lot of traffic directed our way. So
awesome.
What we need to do.
Well, thanks for sharing with the audience, because the main thing that I wanted to, you know, emphasize is just a good idea, you know, and being able to prototype it and get it out to people, and you find out that how much time and money you spend or waste is because of just dealing with the wrong people. You find the right guy.
It's 90% of the battle is just trying to find the right people and get your ideas straight.
Yep. You heard it from the man. We're going to keep track of you guys and kind of stay on the foot hammock, because it's just a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate it.
Good story. Thanks, man.
On Free Talk Live.
Yeah. All right, there we go. All right, what Donna's going to do is, after the end, I got another hour to do, and give me a couple hours after that. We'll finish editing and everything. Then Donna will go ahead and send you the link to the files, the pictures. You'll get the video, the audio, the whole spiel. You guys can do whatever you want with it. Then you'll get that within a few hours. The main thing is, I want you to stay in touch with me when you get into some milestone. And certainly, if you get into some, the man shows up with the stroke dash form you didn't know, and how much I get in mine, I definitely want to tell that story. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you guys come in, any roadblocks or any stuff is going on for such a simple for your foot idea, you know, I need you to keep me informed. I want to do the show, okay?
Okay.
All right. Peace, brother.
All right. Thanks. Bye. I appreciate it. We'll see you. Bye.
If you're a content creator, visit WatchMyBit.com to learn how you can use Bitcoin to generate revenue for your art. That's WatchMyBit.com. In the news, WikiLeaks is demanding answers after Google recently revealed they handed over emails and data from employees of the journalistic outfit to the U.S. government. The information was part of a secret search warrant issued in March 2012, and Google was bound by a gag order from revealing the request. Now, WikiLeaks lawyer Michael Ratner of the Center for Constitutional Rights is asking Google's executive chairman to detail what materials were given to the FBI and whether or not the company challenged the warrant. Julian Assange, WikiLeaks founder and editor-in-chief, said the actions by the FBI were part of a larger conspiracy case against him and his staff.
If I thought it would save an American life, I'd do things far worse than anything that made it into that report. I might even stick a power drill through somebody's knee.
That's what Michael, an anonymous former military contractor, told the anti-media in a recent interview. The former contractor discussed his role in torturing suspected terrorists in the Middle East. Michael says the recent Center report on the use of torture is giving soldiers a bad name. He goes on to admit to participating in waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and beatings of detainees. For more on this exclusive interview, visit theantimedia.org. The public feud between police accountability activists and the Arlington, Texas Police Department continues, as two members of Texas Cop Lock were arrested Saturday afternoon for exercising their First and Second Amendment rights simultaneously. Officers can be seen warning activists to put all weapons, including their openly carried black powder pistols, back into their vehicles while they film the police, or they would be subject to arrest. Two activists did not comply to their orders and were arrested for disorderly conduct and interfering with police business. They were bailed out in a matter of hours. Your job, your home, your car, your money. All of these things provide you with a sense of security. But what about your family security? What have you done to prepare if all of these things were suddenly gone? eFoods Direct has the food security you need. For every emergency, eFoods Direct is food security. Go to eFoodsDirect.com/LibertyBeat or call 800-620-5520 and mention Liberty Beat for 50% off their food preparation planning packs. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, January 26, 2015. Check out the website at thelibertybeat.com. 18 people are dead, including a 10-year-old boy, during protests in Egypt Sunday, marking the fourth anniversary of the country's uprising in 2011. 35 others were reported injured during the protests, while 140 were arrested. The Telegraph reports the violence happened in the neighborhood that served as the battleground that led to the ousting of Hosni Mubarak from his seat of power. On Wednesday, the Dallas City Council will vote on whether or not to discontinue water fluoridation. After heavy lobbying from local activists, the City Council will take up the controversial issue and decide whether or not to resign their contract. In early December, Mayor Mike Rawlings delayed a vote at the request of Councilman Sheffy Kedane. Kedane has been a vocal opponent of water fluoridation, stating the city can save $1 million by voting no. A British biotechnology company is hoping to gain approval to release genetically engineered mosquitoes in the Florida Keys. Oxitec has patented a method of breeding a mosquito with genes from the herpes simplex virus and E. coli bacteria, as well as coral and cabbage. The release of the GE mosquito is an attempt at fighting viruses by having the mosquitoes bite residents. The Food and Drug Administration would have to approve the trials before the insects could be released. Over 130,000 people have signed a petition to stop the experiment. The Liberty Beat is brought to you by Midas Resources Incorporated, helping clients convert their paper 401ks and IRAs to solid gold and silver. Get their 10 Reasons book free by calling 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. Support also comes from The Corey Moore Show, live each Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. Hot topics from a unique Liberty perspective. Catch it at CoreyMooreShow.com. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, January 26, 2015. I'm Brian Hagan, reporting, reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
What are we not afraid of? I don't know. I mean, I tell you, but the big thing that I want to do is I want to make sure that we have keep track of a lot of these guys doing a lot of things and entering into the marketplace, that we're able to just, you know, not be bothered so much. A lot of it's going to be software and such. So that's what we're going to be doing at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk to someone that's going to help us out. Jeremy Galula, staff technologist at Electronic Frontier Foundation. Now, the one thing that about the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I've been dealing with these guys and had them on over the years, you know, for, God,
long time. I've been doing radio over a decade, and they've always been there to answer a lot of questions, but I'm not really sure if they're there to actually help any individual that has problems, or they'll highlight it or follow it. Or we'll find out what role Electronic Frontier Foundation is going to do. But I don't want to read the whole bio on air when he's on, because I want to talk to him. We only have a half hour, two segments. So let me go ahead and do that now. About the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Electronic Frontier Foundation is the leading nonprofit organization defending civil liberties in the digital world. You might have an opinion on Bitcoin. See, we're going to learn a lot. Founded in 1990, EFF champions user privacy, free expression, and innovation through impact litigation, policy analysis, grassroots activism, and technology development. We work to ensure that rights and freedoms are enhanced and protected as our use of technology grows. Even in the fledgling days of the internet, EFF understood that protecting access to developing technology was central to advancing freedom for all. In the years that followed, EFF used our fiercely independent voice to clear the way for open source software, encryption, security research, file sharing tools, and a world of emerging technologies. Today, EFF uses the unique expertise of leading technologists, activists, and attorneys in our efforts to defend free speech online, fight illegal surveillance, advocate for users and innovators, and support freedom-enhancing technologies. Together, we forged a vast network of concerned members and partner organizations spanning the globe. EFF advises policymakers and educates the press and the public through comprehensive analysis, educational guides, activist workshops, and more. EFF empowers hundreds of thousands of individuals through our Action Center and has become a leading voice in online rights debates. EFS is a donor-funded 501c3 nonprofit organization. Depends on your support to continue fighting for users. EFF.org. So I get the impression they're freedom lobbyists. You know, we'll give you an understanding, write some articles and cover some stuff. So we'll see, you know, how they can help in this. And they have, of course, I'm sure, in the past. So I'm wondering the technology that's coming, you know, this distributed internet, leave me alonest money, Bitcoin, bite me stuff, you know. Where are they on that? I mean, is it, well, we got to pass a law. We need to do the law. Are they kind of the digital chamber of commerce? You know, as some people, Perry Ann Boring, I think she was working with that. And they hooked up. Are they on the same wavelength? Are they international? Is it just U.S.? I don't know. Jeremy, is it Guyula? It depends on if it's Hispanic or not, which country he hails from and how you pronounce his name. G-I-L-L-U-L-A, Guyula. I won't say Guyula until he tells us different. At a young age, Jeremy was sidetracked from his ultimate goal of protecting the digital civil liberties by the allure of building and programming robots, which was the focus of his work in college and grad school. Having worked on drones and autonomous cars, he is aware of their potential benefits for society, but is also that much more prepared to guard against the dangers they present to privacy and civil liberties. Of course, having worked at EFF for nearly a year, Jeremy has covered a wide variety of tech topics, including mobile devices, big data, and net neutrality, just to name a few. A strong believer in never taking the straightforward path to anything, Jeremy went to Caltech for undergrad, then got his PhD in computer science from Stanford University by working on robotic projects with a professor electrical engineering from UC Berkeley. Wow. You know, I tell you one thing that we did yesterday, Monday, you know, grandkid day. So we took them to Soretta Candy Factory. The Soretta Candy Factory is in Glendale, Arizona here, and it is the best. I mean, you know, your chocolate, I mean, everything. You know, the white chocolate, the caramel, that, the, you know, mix of the caramel with the pecan of the cream of the whatever the heck. And I'm going, man, it's all yummy. So, and it's real. I mean, you know, it's like big giant. You go through the tour and so on, which we did yesterday with the grandkids. What are we going to do? We're going to tour a factory. What's a factory? Well, a factory is where they make stuff. No, they what kind of factory you want to go? Like how it's made, we'll watch that some times, you know, in different things on how to they, you know, 4 years old, my grandson, and 5 year old, my granddaughter, and you know, and the other one that's a little bit younger than them, about, you know, 2.5, 3 or something, they kind of get it, you know. Where is stuff made? I give you an example. Again, the steel, where do you think the steel comes from? You know, they just, you know, pull it out of a machine or something? You know, how do you think they do that? They make it out of dirt. Now, you make cars out of dirt. And they're like, what? And I go, yeah, you got to mine the ore. And you go and you show YouTubes of, you know, they bring up the dirt and how they mine it and different metals get done a little bit different way. And they're like, oh. And I go, the plastic here. You know how they do that? They take an oil can and they pour some oil in and they make your plastic. No, I don't know, Greg. You're slinging it now, Grandpa. You know, so it's hydrocarbons being made into different plastic. Well, how about this? Oh, in the 3D printing, well, they just take this plastic they made from the oil over here, or where they made it from, you know, and you put it into a string line like you're doing the weed whack the yard, and you put it in kind of 3D print, and you melt it here, and they go, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And the computer tells them where to go, and kind of then they go, oh, okay, that's cool. Then we go, oh, you want to see how you grow? We go out. My grandson was with me. We went out in the farm area in Tonopah and showed big wells being pumped out with 12-inch pipes just spewing water out that's flooding, you know, irrigating the fields. And you see the little bitty plants growing up. And I go, here it is. This big, giant field starts with this little bitty plant that you've helped done in our aquaponics system right over here. It's just this is times different and much. And they goes, okay. Then we start looking at, and as we're going down the highway, you see these big giant bales of cotton on the back of their harvesting the cotton now, or just did. They have the cotton on the back of these trucks. A lot of people don't know Arizona is like number 1, 2, 3 in cotton production. You're number 2, 3 in citrus production. You know, it's a, you know, lettuce is like, you know, number 1 in southwestern of the state there by Yuma. So I'm going, you add water and you have like no storms. There aren't hardly any tomatoes. You get a monsoon, just adds more water, yay. You have a lot of water underneath the ground. You add water, no cloud, lots of sun, warm temperatures. Guess what happens? Lots of food. Then you have the exposed, because it's desert, you got exposed geography here. Not like a lot of topsoil. You got to go down to get to the mining. So they just do strip mining. And this mountain is now a crater. And we just made gazillions of dollars in the state's cool. And we got copper, silver, gold, platinum. This is the kind of things that we show them how to do. So I just want to make sure that, you know, in this engineering and the freedom and the oriented, the, you know, anything that they can think of in their minds for a foot hammock, you know, or, oh, my type keyboard. Yeah, just pull this bad boy out. You get your little mini in here. And I got a keyboard. Boom shakalaka. See?
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
We'll be right back.
And the next segment, we'll have Jeremy Galula on to talk to us about the Electronic Frontier Foundation, how potent it is that they're there, and what are they doing, and what's the issues up now. I mean, it's not like they don't have enough to talk about. I mean, damn. You know, so let's go ahead. Yeah, we'll build up to that. But I want to make sure that, what did we learn today? Today we started off with the foot hammock. You know, Brent Murray and his friend Matt, you know, came up with this. And I wanted to walk it through, just like last week we did with the, you know, my type keyboard, which is freaking awesome. So, I mean, it works really well. I mean, it's just, I got a keyboard, a computer. I can just take my Zoom. My old Motorola Zoom, when it first came out, I got a thing. I like that thing. You know, it upgrades to Android, kind of works, and kind of, you know, it's done. You know, so I'm going, this and this keyboard, I hit the plane, man, rock and roll. You wouldn't believe all the crap I got to take with me to do stuff. And now, especially if I take the show on the road, I got to have a lot of things. I mean, I may go to... I don't know. Should I get a Surface? You know, should I? Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, I want. I'm holding out. I'm trying. I'm going. I want to have a Linux based syncing up. Do what I want. Get it in. Doesn't have to be the most greatest, wonderful kind of. But damn, it has to be where it freaking works. So, you know, talking to him is like talking to Bitcoin. So that's what we talked about in the first hour, is BitcoinSummit.info. So we're, you know, just taking, I had Derek go ahead and move it over. I mean, I could have done it, but I forgot I put it to freedomsphoenix.com, and then we found out where the links were on the site, and kind of, we're just setting it up, so give me a break. But go to BitcoinSummit.info, and I bet you it's already forwarded into that. Let's go ahead and take a look and see. I want to see. So when we go to the Bitcoin page, we have, yeah, there it is, that Bitcoin Summit, Pi Day, 3/14/15. All right, that's good. Pi Day, celebrate Pi Day, March 14th, 2015. Here we go. Now, what's happened is Bitcoin and the digital currency revolution, the Wall Street Journal finally, you know, fell over. They go, okay, damn it. You know, so what are they saying? They're going, hey, man, this is the greatest financial instrument that has been done in 500 years. You know, it is quite simply one of the most powerful innovations in finance in 500 years. And they, them, those freaking know it. And they went through, and this whole article, if you read it, you go to BitcoinSummit.info, and it's one of the top stories. You know, along with the Winklevoss guys, they're going to be all compliant with demand. You know, we'll see how that works out. If applied widely to the inner workings of our global economy, this model could slash trillions in financial fees, computerize much of the work done by payment processors, government property title offices, lawyers, and accountants, and create opportunities for billions of people who don't currently have bank accounts. Great value would be created, but many jobs also will be rendered obsolete. Oh, Cointelegraph, young woman Tony Castrilli, we had her on, and she demonstrated her concern for these out-of-work bankers. Well, what are we going to do about them? And I go, okay, that might be something for you to worry about, but I don't care. Not my problem. You know, we would create so many more jobs, you know, and just production and productivity of people being able to do things without all of these barriers. This is the one thing I like doing, this Kickstarter thing, going to see. This is why I go. All the newsbang widget stuff, kind of what I just watched, Wired coverage of CES, and see, you know, what new tech came out, and Curve TVs and whatever. I mean, I don't care. I go to see these little guys, you know, that do the things like the keyboard, that do the things like the foot hammock, that do the things like the flight controller, that do the things like the temperature scanner of the probe of iGet and controller that only cost $40 when they're selling them, you know, to control satellites for $400,000. I mean, I'm just, come on. So what's the process? I go, this is a great idea. I'm like, it works? Wow, that's cool. Ooh, got a lot of funding. Kickstarter. Everybody want an Indiegogo, GoFundMe campaign. You got 10 times more. That's all very interesting. But I want to know how you did it. I want to know from the beginning. Ping, got an idea. What process do we go? How many hundreds of thousands of dollars do you have to spend to find out you only needed to spend $2,000? You know, and that's exactly what happened with my type keyboard. Now, of course, the technology has changed as time has gone on, but it empowers us. It empowers the individual. It empowers us to be able to do whatever we want. And I give you an example. This is what I'm working on right now. It's always about me, man. I make my life even about, now I just share it with you because I'm a nice guy. Because this is what I want. I want to be able to make the gizmo doodad gadget that works on my car so I can keep this car. I really love our Monteros, but I'm sick and tired of all the plastic breaking on all the little, it just get old. The engine does fine. Transmission's doing great. The suspension, everything's fine. I love the way it worked. Got, you know, it doesn't have as many computer parts. You know, so I'm just going, wow, this is cool. You know, my Impala. There's a little, you know, thing I got to super glue every 6 months or so when I hit it on the intake of the valve. Was it the vacuum hose that goes? It's just a little mount, kind of go, kind of, you know, ooh, to get that, you got to get the whole thing. And it costs 200 and whatever freaking, are you kidding me? We have Donna, one of the vehicles that has a knob that turns on the air conditioner. Oh, it's just a little plastic thing just to make the connection. That little knob, nope, got to get the whole thing, $300-$400. And I'm going, you know, these guys could suck it. I want to be able to take and just scan it in with a 3D scanner and print it, and I'm done. But now it gets better. Matterinform has the scanner. They created Cashew, which is the place where you would scan, get it all, you kind of cat it up, clean it a little bit, and you go, this is what I need. I don't want to have to buy a 3D printer. This is only three or four things I wanted to do with anyway. I don't care. I just want the part. Here is the file. Who will print this part? I'll print this part. I'll print this part. Who do it cheaper? Who do it better? Who has this particular printer that exudes Kevlar or fiberglass or carbon fiber? Which there is a machine. It's $6,000. But for me to, you know, replace, you know, I've spent in these different parts probably $400, $500, $600 on these little parts to keep these things. I'm going, dang it, man. It's starting to get up there. But, you know, I tell you what, you get me one that won't break. You extrude a little bit of carbon fiber, a little Kevlar, a little fiberglass, a little something, something goes in kind of, and it's this big and does, and I plug it in, put it in, done, and it's fixed forever, forever, reinforced into whatever. I'm going, you do that? I got it myself a business. And I'll bet you they're out there. They are. They're high-end prototyping. Jay Leno's garage is out there getting his aluminum thing of a water pan cover for a Duesenberg 12-cylinder. They don't make it anymore. Okay? The answer is always yes. It's just how much. Well, I want that how much to go down. I go to a little shop over here in a retail outlet of the mall outside and around the loop and kind of, hey, I need and do, oh, scan that bad boy in here. Yeah, clean it up a little bit. Kind of, that'll be $46.83. Done. Because it's a hell of a lot cheaper than $120 for the same damn thing. I'm not going to break anyway because it's 15 years old sitting in there in some bin just oxidizing. So I'm going, you know, this is where we're going. Who's going to have the Cashew? Cashew. Bless you. You go to Cashew, and you can see this being done.
Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI in 2013 and charged with victimless crimes in relation to allegedly operating the Bitcoin-based Silk Road black market. He has been in a prison cell awaiting trial ever since. If he did it, he's a hero for making the black market a safer place. If he did not, he's a man wrongfully accused. Either way, if you love freedom and want to end the war on drugs, Ross and his family need your support. You can learn more and help fund his defense at FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org.
I love My Magic Mud. I drink a lot of coffee. I had stains on my teeth. Then I found My Magic Mud, and I was told it would remove stains. So I paid attention when I brushed the first time. My Magic Mud is black tooth powder, and the difference it made in my teeth in one application was noticeable.
Jeremy?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and count to five for me.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. I did a lot of the intro for what we're going to talk about already in the last segment, so I don't have to spend a whole lot of time on that, but we'll do a little something, some of the highlights for you here. Your last name, is it Gilula or Galula? How do you say it?
Galula.
Galula. Okay,
yep.
So Galula, and I'm going to go ahead and just, and how old are you now?
I'm 31, or 30, sorry.
Okay.
Almost 31.
Okay, so 30, so you're not too far out of school and everything. You got your PhDs and goodies recently. And robotics,
yep.
You know, robotics, I want to talk about. Okay, the main thing that I'm concerned with is that what EFF does for people in need, like when you have Google emails going after WikiLeaks and whatever, and your opinion is. Bitcoin is going to be a digital thing, and your opinion is. Distributed internet is a thing, and your opinion is. And advocacy, whatever, as you're dealing with lawmaking policy, kind of, I don't even give a crap. If I got to worry about them, it's the wrong tech, you know?
Right.
So the distributed internet, are you familiar with MadeSafe and storage and all that stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So this is where I'm looking for either you're going to be able to help with our freeing from the man or not. So that's what we're going to find out, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Here we go.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud?
Okay, now we got Jeremy Galula from, he's a staff technologist at Electronic Frontier Foundation. Okay, now his interest is civil liberties of leave me aloneism, and a strong believer in never taking the straightforward path to anything. Jeremy went to Caltech for undergrad, then got his PhD in computer science from Stanford University by working on robotics projects with a professor in electrical engineering from UC Berkeley. So this boy's got skills. So this is one thing I wanted to, we didn't get to finish up. Last segment, I took my kids to see the Soretta Candy Factory and so on. And I asked them, I go, now what, to tell them what a factory is. And many, I mean, they're 4 and 5. I mean, come on. So I go, this is where they make, you want to go see. What might you want to go see them make? What do you want to go see them make? What do you know, maybe a candy? They said, we want to go see robots. You want to see robots being made and robots making robots? I go, well, it's kind of like robots making candy. I got that for you. So already at 4 years old, all they want to talk about is robots. And I'm going, okay, cool. Space stuff and traveling, playing with the Saturn V model I got all the time and rockets, kind of, man. So I guess that Jeremy was one of those kind of individuals. What we're going to go ahead and do is I want to make sure that in the time that we have, we can go long if he has time. But the main thing is Electronic Frontier Foundation, going with your education and your abilities and so on, working at EFF, I'm wondering what brought that on. Jeremy, tell me everything.
So fundamentally, it was, I was going along. I was one of those kids who, 4 years old, I was like, oh, my God, robots, that's the coolest thing. I want to play with robots all day. And as I was going along, somewhere around college, I'm reading the news and I'm seeing news articles about NSA spying and, government seizing people's information without a warrant and, corporations spying on people. And that just sort of started to rattle my cage a little bit, and finally I came to the conclusion that robots are really cool, but before I can play with the really cool toys, I need to live in a good world, and decided that helping the EFF was the best way to accomplish that.
Okay, why is it the best way? EFF, I mean, you got an education, skills, and interest. You could be off making kind of, white picket fence and babes with your Tesla in the driveway. I get it. But the thing is that you're going, this is a little bit more important. We need to focus on this now or there won't be, white picket fences and driveways. So I'm going.
Well, it's not just, especially for a technologist like me, it's more than just the white picket fences and the driveways. It's without, the freedom to tinker with the gadgets that I buy. The freedom to overcome digital rights management so I can actually, get into the software on my smartphone and start playing around with it and maybe, write my own programs for it or write my own, operating system for it or something like that. Without those sorts of rights, I can't do those things. And then you have, on the flip side, just, fundamentally, I had a pretty good technology education, but the civic side of things wasn't neglected, thankfully.
Oh, you Ron Paul are you. I can tell already.
It was thankfully instilled in me, from a very early age that we should live, whether or not we do is a debatable argument, but we should live in a democracy and that individuals have certain rights that we should respect as a society. And if those rights are in danger, that's the thing that, you know, through grad school that kept me up at night wasn't, oh my God, am I going to be able to get that robot to work tomorrow? Is my program going to work? It was, I just read this news article about, you know, this warrantless, you know, seizure of data, and that just, oh my God, I can't fall asleep because that just gets to me.
Well, you know, everybody's going to get to me because you said the word democracy without republic or voting either. You're still voting, you narco. You see my point? I mean, they're always all over the definition of these words. When you say democracy, what are you talking about?
So fundamentally, I'm talking about a government that is beholden to the people. At a very fundamental level, a government that answers to the people, and in a government where you know, where organizations can, you know, secretly spy on people, can, you know, add gag orders when they do have warrants for things, just any sort of subversion of secrecy in our government makes it really hard for me to think that there's. That the underlying process is democratic, or is a, you know, or a public, or anything, any sort of form where the people are at the end in charge.
You know, the thing is, I don't, the people, I'm like the individual. I, you know, screw people. I want about me.
Well, but you, an individual is part of the people, and I'm saying we need those rights for every individual.
I'm hip. Thank you. The one thing that I'm looking at, it will do some specific stuff, but, you know, we have Google is now being exposed as having shared the emails of a lot of people involved with WikiLeaks. And when Julian Assange wrote the article in Newsweek about his meeting with Eric Schmidt, and you go through a lot of his State Department batch of emails that they had exposed, and you go through all that, you start to see that Google is like foreign policy. They are the State Department. And I'm going, wow, this is wow. Of course they did. Now we got CIA using Amazon's cloud storage to, you know, find out which next Yemen drone striker is going to be, and I'm next to my searches for movies, and I'm going, yay, you know. Then, so then I'm going, this is getting bad. So then I'm going, what's the solution to this? Well, here comes things, you know, it's cryptography. And they are freaking out. We have this, it's like, how conveniently we have these attacks in Paris, and whether it was false flag or not, it doesn't matter. You know, they used that incident. Here comes Cameron saying, oh, cryptography for the serfs are not allowed. You know, the subject must not be secret. We be secret, right. But they can't. So this attitude is starting to permeate all governments and the relationship with the people. And I'm going, this is the battle. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the like you said, there any sort of you know, terrorist attack, or even threat, or, you know, it could be somebody, you know, who looks like a terrorist sneezes or something like that, and all of a sudden, you know, the entire upper echelons of the government and the national security industry will be saying, oh my gosh, we can't have, you know, people being allowed to encrypt and have secure communications. And it's I mean, that is a big battle that EFF has fought before. We fought it in the 90s, and we continue to fight. And we're actually pretty optimistic that we will, for the foreseeable future, at least in this country, in the U.S., continue to win it.
Win what? What are you talking about? You're winning what? What's the win?
The win is making sure that strong cryptography remains perfectly legal, and that the government will not be able to force manufacturers and companies to put in back doors into cryptography product.
Okay, now this is my point. If they can, they will. Those that won't leave us alone. They don't give a crap what we should, shouldn't. They don't even care what the law says, you know, a.k.a. NSA Snowden, okay? So I'm right. Going, I've interviewed Bill Binney many times and Sibel Edmonds over the years and Russell Tice, and I already get it. It doesn't matter what the law says. Whatever the hell they want. So my thing is I'm going, like with Bitcoin or distributed internet, I need tech that it doesn't matter what law they pass. Yeah, but, you know, Bitcoin, you know, won't be able to be traded with a legacy system, and BitPay won't like it, and this wallet account, and you're confusing me with someone that gives a crap. Okay, I don't care. I need to be able to have tech like MadeSafe or something that's distributed internet, that's Napster for every data point of you never take this video down, like they did with Mox News, 65,000 videos YouTube took down. Why? Because he has Leon Panetta up there on the BBC a few months ago saying, yep, you need to gird the diapers of the grandkids. We're going to have us a crusade, dirka dirka yeehaw. And I'm going, oh, so they took them all down. I need to know when we come back, Jeremy Galula is going to help us understand EFF's position on it and their capability, because I need to know this. Are we at a point to where the tech doesn't matter what the laws say? If Bitcoin cannot survive some Schumer, you know, passing some whatever the hell, it's the wrong tech. Is the tech coming? We'll find out.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, you see where I'm going with this, right? I need to know if the tech can... See, lobbying for Congress to not say you can't... You know, if Bitcoin and distributed internet and all that relies on some Schumer legislation, it's the wrong tech.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there's the short answer and the long answer.
Whatever fills in it. We can go... That's why I wanted to have you at the end here, and we can go long without commercial interruption, whatever we need to, something. So we'll find out. But the point is that we're doing a BitcoinSummit.info. We just got the site and domain kind of doing whatever, and it'll be up here in a little bit. Andreas Antonopoulos is going to be a speaker, Tux Avant, Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs, and we have a bunch of the exchanges and some of the wallets and everything. I'll do a workshop for merchants and newbies here in Phoenix, Arizona. We do our Freedom Summit. We're doing a Bitcoin Summit, rock and roll. I got signs on pedal cabs all over the Super Bowl this week and everything. I mean, boom shakalaka. I'm not dicking around, okay?
That's for sure.
So this the thing is that I want to make sure, well, we'll talk about it. Here we go.
So with Bitcoin... Here we go.
Grim guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Whole thing, man. I talked to Jeremy just a little bit off air, and I could, you know, blah, 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 skip to the end. I need to know if you're going to be lobbying. We got the digital Chamber of Commerce, or we got, you know, the Cointelegraph, you know, publicate. We got Why Bitcoin. We got the Bitcoin Foundation. We had Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton for 3 hours debate. The next day, Andreas Antonopoulos came on last Wednesday and said, you know, in the postmortem of. And I'm going, blah, 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 blah. We have BitcoinSummit.info. Go check it out. We're just starting to put up the stories that are kind of focused on Bitcoin and to promote on Pi Day, 3/14/15 at 9:26, whatever it is in the morning. How many decimals I got to remember here is when Andreas wanted to talk. He goes, yep, I want to be at the 9, whatever. Okay, we'll work it out. But the point is that blah, 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 I don't freaking care what the government does. If I have to care, it's the wrong tech. We're having a Bitcoin ATM that is not FinCEN required, you know, or compliant. But what will they do? They limit that it only does 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever a day, so it doesn't get it. But the law doesn't matter. That's my point. So I got to ask Jeremy, Electronic Frontier Freedom Front Foundation. I'm going, you know, Frontier Foundation. I'm going, hey, you know, help me out here. Are we advocating for good laws, or are we advocating for tech that doesn't give a crap about the laws? What are we doing?
We're doing both. EFF takes both approaches. EFF goes after, you know, trying to get the government to understand what the issues are and
why?
Make the right choices.
Why?
Because in the end, there are situations where no matter what the tech you have, if the government comes knocking on your door and arrests you, regardless of the tech, You know, it could be on suspicion and innuendo. You know, they may not even have the evidence. But at the end of the day, you know, the government does have some power. And so we need to make sure that they use that power, you know, correctly.
Well, I need to make sure they don't even know that I got power.
And then that's the other side thing is EFF also, we do a lot of work on promoting technology that helps people communicate securely, anonymously, protects them from being tracked online, both by companies and then, of course, the NSA and other government agencies piggyback on the tracking that companies do. And make great use of that. And so we work both fronts.
Okay, now we've been doing this for a long time and covering, you know, on radio and such, that it started off, you know, 15 gazillion things, Echelon, Carnivore. It finally got into where they were putting the Prism things. We were knowing about this in early 2000s, you know, with WorldCom. Yep. And all this, the Pacific fiber optic of they got it, man. Don't ever think. Then you have, what was it, InfraGuard. You know, I covered InfraGuard back in freaking 04. I'm going, let me tell you, it's a voluntary kind of sort of, and if you need this antiviral FBI backdoor into your utility of we rule you now. And I'm going, does anybody negotiating with these guys, dance with the devil, you don't change him. I go, I need tech that doesn't matter, that's international, that's global, that's galactic, you know, that we can do in peer-to-peer and they can suck it. Now, they do it with like Napster or MP3 files or, you know, the pirating of the whatever the heck and so on, demonstrate that it can be done. But I'm looking for, what about distributed internet technology like storage and made safe and so on? Are you guys aware of that?
Yeah, we're definitely aware of it. We haven't done a lot of work yet on distributed storage type of stuff. Our focus so far has mostly been on anonymous and distributed communication. So just getting to the point where people can communicate securely and can, you know, maintain the security and privacy of their data on their own computers. But I definitely think that's an area we're going to be looking into more and more in the near future.
Okay. Well, near future, like yesterday, okay?
No kidding.
Because, you know, see, from my perspective, we do a freedomsummit.info. We do that. It is for the newbies. It's the workshop for the merchants. We're going, yeah, blah, 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 blah. We just had Wall Street Journal came out this weekend saying Bitcoin and blockchain technology is the biggest financial advancement in 500 years. They can sit there and whine and bitch all they want, but Wall Street Journal knows it ain't going away, okay?
Yep.
It is not going away, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. And Electronic Frontier Foundation, I need to know when we do this kind of stuff and things come up, they start attacking these guys, we send them to you, and what happens?
So frequently, we'll end up defending them. You're probably familiar with the Tidbit case.
I am not. Go for it.
So Tidbit was, it's a related to Bitcoin case. It was a bunch of MIT undergrads for a class project said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if instead of having to see ads when you're browsing the web, when you browsed a website, you agreed that in exchange for not showing you ads, the website could do a very little bit of Bitcoin mining on your computer, just use a little bit of your processing power.
Yeah.
And of course, it'd be voluntary. You know, you'd opt in for this. And they created a proof of concept. It didn't even actually do the Bitcoin mining. It was sort of like a little, you know, dotted box where it said, you know, plug in Bitcoin mining here. But the New Jersey Attorney General said, oh my God, they're hacking into people's computers, and sent them a very, very broad subpoena for all this information about whether or not, you know, how did this work? Was it on people, the computers of people in New Jersey? Did they, basically he was trying to figure out, you know, had they broken the law? Had they violated the CFAA? And so EFF stepped in and is currently helping them out, trying to defend against this terribly overbroad request for information.
Okay, I think I remember this case. This is where they had some kind of a hackathon. They came up with it, put it out, and they, New Jersey or New York, did a subpoena on Massachusetts school to get all their core code or something?
So they subpoenaed the students. To get all the source code, the document, you know,
based
what
on
websites it was installed on.
Based on because they can? I mean, what?
Basically, yeah, because they, based on, I mean, New Jersey's argument is we have a responsibility to protect consumers in New Jersey.
Oh,
and
that
you
was
may
their
have,
goal.
Yeah. And you may have put it on some consumers without their, you know, websites without their knowledge, even though they never actually, you know, finished implementing the code.
No. They understood the threat of it. That means somebody's paying attention. See, that's why I don't like working with legislators. We have, we made a big deal at our centennial here in Arizona. It was in 12. And we used it as an excuse starting in 07, right at the beginning of the Ron Paul thing. A legislator we were working with was a state coordinator, chair for Ron Paul here, a state senator. That's a, you know, a good woman that we've worked with over the years. And like one out of billions, you know. And what they did is we had for to celebrate our centennial, the state government and the treasury minted 1 ounce gold, 1 ounce silver, and 1 ounce copper medallions, you know. So it showed that we could, you know, to supply all public demand. The second you put gold or anything into legislation, man, it's on somebody's screen in Geneva. I mean, these guys, they want to play. I'm just going, you know, screw all y'all. I am so sick of this social and economic engineering of everything. I need tech that is impervious to that. Now, Bitcoin, distributed internet, when it becomes impervious to it, then EFF's role is, hey, it's impervious, go over there. So I'm wondering, you know, it's lobbying, it's lawsuits, you have a team of lawyers, are you selecting cases? What are those cases criteria to get on your radar screen? Help me out.
So yeah, so EFF is, it's not just technologists like me, it's actually, we have even more attorneys on staff than we do have technologists. It's also a bunch of activists also in the team. And essentially what it comes down to when we look at cases is this going to have a major impact on an issue that's important to us? So EFF is not, it's not a huge organization, it's not, you know, like the ACLU with offices all over the country and in every state. We're actually a small organization. We're about, I think, about 60 people now. And so we have to take the big cases that we think will have a major impact on, you know, how cases then after that will be decided. And so if you think you have a case, the best way to get on our radar screen is actually to email our intake coordinator at info@EFF.org. And then, you know, he'll go through, he'll, you know, understand what your case is and then talk to the lawyers and see if it's something that fits in with what we would take.
Okay, we're going to find out because a whole bunch of these people that need this kind of help need to know where to go. And I keep sending them over to EFF, but I need to understand some of the criteria so that I'm not wasting my time. I mean, you know, or theirs. I'm going, you know, look, man, you know, who do you want? You know, who are you going to help? Who are you going to, and what are the issues coming up? We're going to go ahead and continue this conversation for as long as he can stand it and we get all his brain drained into the archive and, you know, and as long as he's not boring, okay? So we'll go, and I'm sure he won't be boring for a long time. We're going to talk about it here. Go to the archive. We're going to go ahead and continue this conversation. And I apologize we didn't have him longer, but this will be better without commercial interruption because I got a lot of questions. A lot of stuff is coming up, and we're going to find out. Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF.org. Go to the archive.
If you're looking.
All right. Now we don't have to worry about interruption, and this will continue.
Sounds good to me.
What I want to do, how long do you got? Because I got a bunch of questions.
I've got probably maybe about another half an hour or so. I mean, okay. Depending on, you know, how things go.
Yeah, I thought you said Pentagon, how things go. You know, that's good. That's a good phrase. Pentagon, how... Well, it depends. It's on, you know, the Pentagon. It depends. No, how you say it. It Pentagon's how things go. That's good. That's awesome. All right. Now, the controversy around Google giving up emails to any and everybody, I mean, this is not like a shock to anybody. Anybody thought that their Gmail was secure from the man was a moron to begin with. But, you know, can we ever expect any kind of a third-party thing to a central point of it's ours now to be secure?
Yeah, so there are actually companies and services out there where they actually advertise that they have zero knowledge. So you, the way the technology works is you hold the encryption key. It gets encrypted on your computer before it then gets sent up to their storage space in the cloud. And then they don't have the encryption key. They can't unlock it. And if you lose your password or your key, you're out of luck too. So it's not like you can call up their support desk and say, hey, I lost my password. Can you reset it? Their answer will be, no, we can't do that because we don't have access to it.
And do you guys check that claim? I mean, is there some open source code? Somebody knows what the hell it said? Because they go, well, Ernie, it's all open source. I'm going, well, that may be of use to somebody, but not me.
So we do. So to some degree, we have to take some of these companies at their word. Some of these companies don't open source their code, and
next.
So we have to take them at their word. And you know, in the end, at some level, you're always taking someone at their word, right? Because unless you built the computer yourself from scratch, from the ground up, you know, you etched every tiny little piece of silicon. You know, at some level, to use modern technology, you have to assume that it's doing what you tell it to do.
You know, I tell you how bad it's gotten, and this is probably not a big giant secret, but and my audience knows, when I finally started, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and get some Bitcoin and take it offline, put it in the, you know, paper wallets in the time capsule, tattoo it on my dog's butt, something, right? So I go, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of put it over here. So I have a gentleman in Vegas named Tuxedon, one of the activists in the Bitcoin space, and he says, yeah, I'll teach you. So I go up there, I go have my son, a pilot, he's, you know, in his mid-20s, but I go, hey, man, you take dad for a plane ride. Let's go up to Las Vegas for a day, and we'll come back, and you'll learn something about Bitcoin. All right, whatever. So we go up there, spend all day learning how to do Bitcoin paper wallets. Well, one of the things is you want to be secure, you get yourself a laptop, and you get yourself a printer, and it goes in your bunker, safe room, gun room, whatever the hell, and it doesn't touch the internet. You never turn it on. Heck, he even desoldered his Wi-Fi stuff. And I'm going, this is how far you can go taking responsibility on your own to do this stuff. But that very thing right there, they want to make illegal.
Wait, desoldering your Wi-Fi connector?
That's probably next. But I mean, for you to be able to have your own Bitcoin without it being connected to anything, without it being getting capital gains on its increased value as property, without you being, it's white Bitcoin versus black Bitcoin, it's approved Bitcoin, is it in with the legacy system, it's money laundering, blah, 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 blah. I went to New York last year, the New York Bitcoin Conference, and met with some of these lawyers and regulators and kind of lunch with this and talked to Schumer aide kind of crap. And I can see behind their eyes, man, they are like, wow, it's like Mr. Smith in the second Matrix, man. They're going, yeah, see your enemy, okay? Because they already got it figured out. They're going, look, it's already illegal. We call it money laundering. If we catch you, kind of what? I go, okay, so don't catch me. So I need to know the tech that is available for things like Bitcoin and distributed internet and ones and zeros flying around and they don't get it. One, that eliminates enormous amount of social and economic engineering. It eliminates jobs that, you know, are created by government monopoly of you're allowed and license and registration and regulation and all that. And it opens up billions of people to be able to interface without any kind of a roadblock that's managed by geography. You know, it's like, oh, these are our slaves and you're not allowed to talk or commerce with our slaves unless you pay the toll for us to be able to get a cut of the tariff of dealing with our slaves, but we want your slaves. It's like, it's all a slave thing. So I'm going to EFF, and I've been covering you guys since you were in freaking junior high or something, probably, okay?
Yeah, probably so.
I'm going, look, I EFF has been, and it's starting to change. I'm glad to have you on for this perspective, and let me ramble here a little bit because I want your perspective. What has happened is it's always about negotiating. Well, Mr. Congressman, you need to have you know, a little bit more respect for the freedoms of people to be able to do and innovate and blah, 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 blah. When my thing is, I don't want to even ask them. They're not, anything they say is a lie, and it's not going to be for any amount of time anyway. So I'm going, I need tech that is impervious to they, them, those won't leave us alone. Are you feeling that's coming?
Well, so to some degree, it already is here. So with on the Bitcoin side of things and on the financial side of things, that's a tough problem to crack because at some level, when you're talking about, you know, transactions, you have to exchange something of value with somebody else, and then to guarantee in a, you know, on a technology side of things that you're not, you know, double spending, it has to be public, which means it's very difficult to make it anonymous. And so that's why, I mean, that's why the, you know, Bitcoin is, it's a good start, but there still needs to be some development there, essentially, in terms of trying to make it completely anonymous and, you know, untraceable. And so that the government can't interfere. Now, on the flip side, in terms of communications and data storage, I'd say the tech is already here. It's not necessarily the easiest to use, but it does exist. And one of the things we are trying to do is to make it easier to use. One thing EFF has done is we do a crypto usability prize where we're trying to encourage developers to make it easier for normal people, people who are not, you know, computer science PhDs, to be able to use strong cryptography easily and without having to worry about, you know, what is a key and what is a private key and what is a public key. And so that's something that we are working on. But if you have the time and the sort of patience, a lot of that tech is already here.
Well, I mean, you know, I go, where? Is it you here? You mean anyone can use it? U.S. can use it? It's outside of, I got to go on Tor? I mean, when you say here, what do you mean?
So I mean technology, for example, like Tor, like PGP for encrypting emails, various disk encryption tools for encrypting your hard drive, encryption tools for encrypting your smartphone. Actually, EFF has a pretty good guide on a lot of this. It's called the Surveillance Self-Defense Guide, and it's at https://ssd.eff.org, and it has all sorts of how-tos on, you know, how to use PGP for Linux, how to encrypt your email, how to use encrypted chat, how to use Tor, how to encrypt your Windows device, how to encrypt your Mac, all of these things.
Okay, I'm going to put you to the test. You ready? Here we go.
Sure.
I have many times had individuals come on, they just espouse how great and wonderful Linux is. Then, of course, it starts off how great and wonderful Bitcoin. I've been covering it since, God, at least 10, if not 9. I mean, you know, it was from the beginning. I remember when they were nothing. They were buying pizzas for $20,000. I mean, you know, back
right.
in the day. I got my first Casatius coin when it was, I think it was $4 or something, you know. So I'm going, I wish I had a bunch more now.
no kidding.
But the thing is that I understood the promise of the tech. And I'm going, ooh, here we go. Now, they, them, those are going to be, you're not allowed. Why? Well, because you're not allowed. Well, how do you stop it? Because we asked really nice. I'm going, oh, okay. So it's one of those that's something you can't stop. So I'm going, okay, here we go. Well, when I talk to the guys about Linux and they want to put, you got to let, I'm looking at like a dozen computers. In the studio here, I got all kinds of, I'm going, I will do one. Just, and it was a laptop, which I eventually put Windows back on to do some studio stuff that I needed to do. And then another Linux that I used, I just wanted to do video editing. I thought I might get more processing power with all the crap and everything. So I just did it because. So I paid staff a week. That turned into 2 weeks for him just to load it and learn it. What did I find out? Hewlett-Packard and Microsoft, you know, have conspired. You're not allowed to dual boot. You know? And then, okay, we got to wipe it and put it on there. Okay, we'll do that. I got a new computer laptop I wanted to do my Bitcoin paper wallet stuff on. Well, I couldn't even find how in the Windows 8 to even boot the CD or the stuff up to even do Linux. I mean, it's just, I'm going, oh my goodness. So I have somebody come on, one of you guys. Well, you just. And I'm going, I've heard this before. And I talked to Andreas about it, and he goes, yep, it's the same thing. The people that are in Linux and the people that are in Bitcoin are the same people, and they talk the same. You just this, you just that. Yep. And that just button is 47 keystrokes. And I go, look, no, I want a grandma just button. I want my laptop that comes preloaded. I want it to sync with my phone, my tablet, my my laptop, my desktop. I want to have, how come I don't have that? Because they don't have consumer skills. They don't have the user interface thing. So in Bitcoin, you get Paul Pway with Airbits. It comes up with this grab going, oh my God, it's 4 years and I finally got something to put on my wife's phone. And when I call the grandma just button, that's who I'm thinking of. So my thing is that all this tech and all the stuff that you're talking about, until we have the people that understand user interface with grandma, It's not going to happen. The white adoption they're looking for is some government permission slip. It's the Winklevoss twins coming up and saying, we're going to be totally U.S. compliant in the exchange of white Bitcoin kind of crap. I already see where this goes. It's a philosophy that we're up against. So I need to know where EFF is. Are you guys there to make somebody happy or nice? Are you driven by anarchist tendencies of voluntarist, leave me alone, libertarian something? Or are you just leaning Republicans? Help me out here. Why do I need you?
I would say because, to be perfectly honest, all of the above. EFF is a very diverse organization, and I'd be lying if I said we were just one of those things. I mean, I'm not just trying to, be everything to everybody.
I don't care I just want you to say it. I'm giving you an opportunity to help me out.
And so the answer is, it is, like I said before, I mean, we do, part of it is we do want to and it's not just EFF making it, but encouraging the greater community. Because again, we're only, 50 or 60 people. We can't do everything.
Wow, I'm shocked you're that many. Damn.
But what we can do is we've got a big lever. And we can use that lever to strategically move the world. And that's what we try to do. And so that's why we've got things like the Crypto Usability Prize, where we are going to give a ton of money to open source developers who actually make it, create that grandma button for you so that grandma really can easily encrypt her communications to her, to her grandchildren. Or something like that.
Yeah, no, see, this one, and that's really starting to take over. That's what I do. I've been around long enough. I just keep saying it long enough. People start picking it up. The grandma adjust button. So they're going, the grandma adjust button. I'm going, probably the grandma button they'll get down to, because they go, just button. What the hell do you mean just button? And I go, because that's what you guys always say.
It's
you just. I go, come over here and show me the just. I go to hackathons or some Texas Bitcoin conference last year. I go, all right, 100 of you guys. I want you, somebody come up here and show me this just button you're talking about. Okay, I don't see it. And they get up there, and I go, see, you lying sacks of snot. Okay, so this is, but it's coming. And when this tech goes to where this is the battle, after you had the killings at the a magazine, newspaper, whatever in Paris, within days, Cameron's coming up and saying, oh, I'm sorry, encryption for the mass is not allowed. Why?
Because they want to be able to snoop in and surveil, and they think that the only way they're going to be able to catch a terrorist is if they can spy on every single person.
These things aren't about
what it comes down to.
It's not protecting the people from terrorists, it's protecting the government from us.
And that's part of it, too. And
that's the main part of it. You're thinking, you're talking to activists here. I know. We do the Lovolution thing, and I'm going, they're like, damn, where'd that come from? We need to have an off switch somewhere. You start getting flash mobs going into, squares and stuff and Arab Spring, and we're just not going to take it. I mean, then you have all the crap that they do and the false flagging of Ukraine. We're going to need a Durka jihad war of something. And then you got people coming up, Mox News. Mox News comes up. He puts all this stuff up there, and 65,000 videos gone. Why? Because Panetta was up there saying we're going to have a grand kid war and Durka jihad and crusades and what? Hey, man, you guys need to see it. Nope, don't want it up there. Google, YouTube, gone. Why? Because it can. So when you do distributed internet, we're setting this up for 6 months. We've been working on this. We're melding some Watch My Bit stuff to where your on button is a Bitcoin dime of I can pay content providers or whatever. Distributed internet that goes up. We already got the player put in and everything. And I got videos that I can always access that never go away that I can find and they can't take down or censor. And you start doing that, that turns the entire internet and every political dissident into the power of I push a button and they got WikiLeaks capability. That is what they're afraid of. Those won't leave us alone. And I need to know when they come down and the pressure is going to be, EFF is going to be seen like those compromisers that do and help, the Red Crescent, do freaking tents to refugees in Gaza, and they're going to come and target because you're not in with the program. Do you feel that threat?
Yeah, I mean, so we definitely feel that threat. And when people's ability to express themselves, when their fundamental civil rights come under and civil liberties come under attack, that's when we don't compromise. There is no compromise when it comes to any of the Bill of Rights.
Well, I'm. What does that mean? I mean, you know, we're going to take up guns. You're going to do a Kickstarter. I mean, you're going to. I mean, you know. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, how many? What are the lawsuits you're involved with? What kind of actions do you take? We give you money and help. What you doing for us lately?
So we've got EFF. So that doesn't mean EFF takes up guns. Our primary method is in the courts. And so if play it straight. If you're not satisfied with us fighting for things in the courts, then we're not your organization. But if you think we can accomplish things via the courts, then you know we're your group. So we've got several different lawsuits against the NSA for the warrantless spying. We frequently file lawsuits when it comes to locational privacy and police trying to get data without a warrant. We've got a lawsuit against the LAPD right now because they won't release documents and information about their automatic license plate reader program. We want to know, you know, where they're scanning and who they're scanning, and they're refusing to say, so we're suing them for that information. So a lot of different cases like that.
Well, they're not going to go away. You know, they keep doing it. By the time you win, they're already done it and on to something else and promising how good they're going to be now, you know? So this battle is not just U.S. If you're an activist or an EFF like you in pick any other country, a lot of times it's the U.S. and corporations that are doing it anyway. They're getting all this information. Hey, we didn't surveil it. We just got it in a big giant dump from Google.
Right.
You know, gosh darn it. That was public information, kind of, sort of. You know, that's a violation. And so what do? Retroactively, they want to have, you know, Verizon, AT&T, and whoever, Gmail, Yahoo. They go, hey, man, you want us to do, we need forever and always, we're not going to get in trouble, and they can't sue us when people find out what we did for you.
And so that's another thing we do is we you know, at some level, all we can do in that case is name and shame the companies when this sort of thing happens. And so one of the things we publish is a Who Has Your Back guide, which is a guide to when the government comes and asks a company for your data, what is that company going to do? And so you can find companies in there like Verizon and AT&T where, you know, it's obvious the company is not going to do jack, you know, diddly squat for you, and they'll just roll over and hand over all your data. But then there are other companies like Spider Oak where they will, or Twitter, where they will fight for you, maybe even without being able to tell you that they're fighting for you.
Well, a lot of these
maybe they've organized things so that they can't even give your data.
Exactly.
There's just no way for them to do it.
See, that's where I see the advantage. We were up at the Bitcoin booth at the Consumer Electronics Show, or the Bitcoin area. They had a lot of vendors. One of them there was a rotating, anonymizing, then something. What do you call those? You know, when you go on to your ISP is anonymized.
Like a VPN?
Yeah, VPN. That's what I knew, it was a V something. So VPN stands for what, Mr. Geek?
Virtual Private Network.
Okay. We can't say that, but anyway, that's what it stands for. All right. VPN, Virtual Private Network. Describe how that works and why that's a benefit to people.
So a virtual private network, basically what it means is instead of, you know, normally when you're trying to, you know, browse a website, your data goes, the communications back and forth between your computer and the server goes directly from your computer, you know, over a bunch of network cables, eventually it hits the server. With a VPN, all of your data first goes to another server, which is run by whoever runs your VPN. And from there, it goes out to the website. And then same way, it goes back to the VPN server first and then to you. And the trick is it's encrypted between you and the VPN server. And so no one can tell what you're accessing until it exits the VPN. And if a bunch of people are using this VPN simultaneously, then a bunch of data is going in and out of that VPN server, but there's no way to tell who that data necessarily belongs to.
So they have to get to the point that the people that they're really worried about is when they order their Dell computer online, it goes straight to the NSA, and their login passwords as you're typing that's going through broadcast to the van out front or over the power line of blah, 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 blah. How far off am I?
So running a VPN will help that to some degree. At some level, if the communications isn't encrypted end to end, as in it's It's unencrypted once it leaves the VPN server to the website, and this is true if it's ever if you're browsing just a regular HTTP site. Then the NSA can, you know, sniff it, and they may not be able to tell precisely who it is, but, you know, if your username, like in my case, frequently is Jay Galula, and I send that unencrypted, they'll be able to tell pretty well who it belongs to. Now, with that said, if it's encrypted, if it's HTTPS, then generally speaking, certainly at a mass surveillance level, the NSA is not going to be able to break that. And so the one key trick you can make sure to do to make sure that your communications is encrypted, or to make sure that your communication is secure, is to make sure that it's every time you visit a web page, it says HTTPS. Now, unfortunately, not all websites support that. But to make it easier, EFF actually has a browser plugin you can download for Firefox or Chrome, where if a website does support it, it'll automatically upgrade you and make sure you're using that secure connection.
Okay, Donna's going to put this into the third hour in the archive. Now, what is she putting up? Where do we go get this?
It's called HTTPS Everywhere. And you can find it on our website. You can also find it on, you know, if you just the normal way you would go and look for add-ons in Firefox or Chrome. You can Google for it, or if you prefer not to have Google know everything you're doing, you can use this, a more privacy-minded search engine like DuckDuckGo or something like that.
Okay, now let's talk about that. You know, when we do these kind of searches for this, and you called it what? What's the encryption software?
So this is HTTPS Everywhere.
HTTPS Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Okay,
yep.
Donna, you got it? Yeah, she's doing it. She's putting it up there. Okay, everybody know. Now, the point that I was making is that because people such as yourself that are dealing in activism, are dealing in sensitive data, are dealing in distributed internet and Bitcoin and all that, kind of, they're going, you know, I'm going to take and do it and I'm over here now. Well, you needed that. You ordered that, online with your Bitcoin and got that Linux-based kind of whatever, you know, and it took a diversion to the NSA to put in the chip of we know what your keystrokes are. I mean,
right.
How, you know, that happens or it doesn't happen?
So it definitely, it does happen. I don't think I wouldn't say it is widespread. I mean, it's not like the NSA is intercepting every single computer that gets sold.
Just Jeremy's.
Just mine. But yeah, no, seriously, they are probably intercepting a lot of computers that are going to targets that they think they should be, you know, monitoring for whatever reason. And so there are a couple different ways around. I mean, this is a tougher one because, like I said, unless you're building the computer from scratch, it's tough to know what went into it.
Oh, no, I can tell you this right now. I had a video computer go down. Okay, I'm going to up this thing. It's just for the streaming part of connecting with the TV network and all that kind of stuff. So I go, all right. I'll build it straight, and we'll pimp it out. So I go and I buy the case. I buy an easy this. I get a good that. I put the board in. Before I even loaded the operating system, it's a Motorola Google, we want all your stuff. You got to click here. I totally agree. Everything on this computer is yours now. I agree.
Jesus, what were you? Holy cow.
The motherboard.
I can't imagine what.
The motherboard.
Wow.
Before I even put the CD in. So I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? You know, God, we can look it up right now. Go ahead. Are you at a computer?
Yeah.
Okay, do Motorola Google motherboard. I agree. You ever see the South Park episode? You checked, I agree. You totally agreed. You know, the human scent iPad or whatever it was. Do you remember that?
No, I
got
to think
hell
I
no.
That one.
Donna put the human scent iPad in the third hour. You watch this. It will freaking that episode was funnier than hell because it goes, your iTunes thing keeps changing all the time. You go up there, you agreed, and all the little kids are going to Kyle. I go, they want to sew my lips to someone's butt and someone's face to my button will be a continuous gastrointestinal kind of, and Steve Jobs was trying to create a iPod that would read. Why won't it read? Because it said, you know, I agree. Well, you should read. Why I won't read, you know? So I'm just going, it was so perfect. You got to see this. I mean,
I'll definitely check it out.
Oh, no, hell no. You got human scent iPad. You put that up and you'll go, if this isn't exactly what I'm talking about, because what they do is they put the motherboard in before I even started. I'm agreeing to anal probe by Google. So I'm going, okay. So I heard that we were at Consumer Electronics Show, and I saw something that Motorola or something, are they still Google? They sold, spun it off to somebody or something? You know anything about that?
I mean, I know that Google had acquired Motorola's mobile division for building phones, and I think I heard something about them spinning it off, but I don't remember for sure.
I thought I had, oh, I'm going to start fresh, I'm going to do it new, I can put before, you could, it didn't matter, Linux, Windows, doesn't matter. Motherboard, I totally agree, that everything goes through, I'm going, really? Okay. So it's at the hardware level that this is going on a lot of times. So I'm going, all right. So where's the encryption have to be? I count on you guys to help me out here, you know, because damn. So this is the advocacy that you do, is it you highlight some of the innovations, and when the man comes after them, they have a solution. So then Bitcoin must be illegal and they go after encryption or whatever. How are you guys on Bitcoin? Is that a thing to y'all?
So we don't really cover the financial side of it, like whether or not it's money laundering or stuff like that, because we're not a finance, you know, or a money law firm in that way. I mean, when it comes to the technology side of things, and you know, should you be allowed to run a Bitcoin mining, or should the New Jersey Attorney General be able to subpoena you just because you wrote some code and talked about it? That's definitely, you know, that is definitely in our wheelhouse. But when it comes to, you know, does it meet SEC rules or whatever like that, that is unfortunately a little beyond the sort of thing that we focus on.
Okay. Now, what about the Silk Road and Ulbricht and some of these others? They're going, man, you host a web page and we don't like what's on there. Jail. I mean, is that a thing to y'all?
So that is. So, for example, like the Barrett Brown case. So Barrett Brown was a journalist, and, you know, apparently his crime was he linked some documents that Anonymous had basically stolen, and that was ridiculous. I mean, that is an area where we thought it was totally and completely and utterly ridiculous that linking to something constitutes a crime. Not even reposting it, not even, you know, just posting a link to it and saying, look, there it is. And so that is, I mean, in the end, he ended up taking a plea deal for something else. But the fact that that was what started them harassing him, I mean, that sort of thing is definitely within our wheelhouse.
Okay, well, what do we, you know, you think is going to happen? I mean, this is going to be a threat. See, you understand why, for years I've been covering, I talked to all the boys in the Bitcoin, kind of went to different, I get it, you know, I'm not an uber geek, but I got one question. If they can, they are. They, them, those, they want to expand, maintain, enhance, control over the individual and the serfs for the benefit of, because they can, you know, I'm going, yep. They are. I mean, duh. So, but the point is, I go, can they? You know, this technology, and if they go, hey, they can, well, it's illegal because they can, you deliberate. I remember the only time I ever saw Tom and Jerry where they talked was one cartoon to where Tom's going to frying pan, whatever, the mouse, Jerry, and he ducked. And he goes, you deliberately ducked. The only time there was ever any, you know, a text or audio or a copy, I'm going, wow. And I always remembered that one scene, you deliberately ducked. You're not allowed to duck. And I'm going, if you're not allowed to duck from the side of the head, kind of, that's bad. And that makes this government bad. There's no good. It's not defending the rights of the individual. Are we past that? Are we done now? Are we, you know, you're going to try and minimize the damage from, you know, Chucky Schumer, you know, the Chucky with his knife or whatever. But I'm going, are you really thinking you're going to change the nature of government? Are you just warning us? I mean, what's your role?
So, changing the nature of government in terms of Congress, it's a long shot. We try to do it a little bit, just because you never, I mean, it's one of those things where you never know. You might find a sympathetic, you know, person in Congress, and you might get lucky. But our main sort of avenue there is changing things via the courts, because the courts are, you know, what they say goes as law. And someone might try to, might break that law, but then we can hold them accountable. And again, this is why I say it goes back to both sides, because we work the courts, but we also work the technology so that, you know, we don't even have to worry about taking it to the courts. And so that's fundamentally, because, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's certainly from my perspective, I wish we lived in a world where we could, you know, trust our representatives and, you know, that they would actually do things for the people as opposed to for themselves. But that's not the world we live in, and so the only sort of avenue we have to petition our government is through the courts.
Or we ignore them, and we don't got to petition nothing, and we're out here, they don't see it. You see my point?
Right. Yep. Or you, or the technology gets to a point where, you know, there's it's beyond and makes it unnecessary for the government to intervene.
Okay, are you seeing that happening? Are you, is that kind of like, you know, you're sitting there wringing your hands going, they have no idea what they're doing, you know, and it's coming, or it's something, there's still going to be a role for you. You see my point? I already know. I mean, if I have to get their permission slip or the FCC approval of the me transmitting of the kind of whatever, you know, that if I got to go to them for a permission slip to be free, I'm not expecting a good result, you know. But if I can develop tech that it doesn't freaking matter, and I'm, you know, real time light speed communicating with the translating software of doing a trade for widgets and gizmos and services around the planet to the 13-year-old kid with a loincloth in darkest Africa with an outer net connection of a satellite cell phone that's broadcasting to the whole valley that's doing widgets. I'm making a bunch and we're doing, everybody's good, and the man didn't get one little itty bitty cut of it. They didn't see it happen. They can't do anything about it. They don't even know, you know, who to send some Islamic whatever ISIS terrorist to go wipe out the village because they didn't get, you know, the permission slip from and pay their dues to the troll on the bridge of the whatever the government. You see my point?
Yep, yep, absolutely.
So
In terms of the communication side of things, the tech is there, the UI is coming, that sort of grandma adjust button. But in terms of
user
the financial
interface,
thing,
so you guys always do these.
All about the user interface.
Yeah, you guys always do these initials, and I go on for hours and I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, UI user interface, make
user
it
interface,
pretty.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and so that's, and again, that's something we're promoting because you're absolutely right. It's not there yet, and that's. We realize that that's what's got to come. I mean, all the fancy math and code in the world isn't going to help if somebody can't just turn it on and know how to use it. You're absolutely right there. And so that's one of the things we're promoting strongly.
Okay, so you're like about 30 years old. You got your PH freaking D, man. You're out there, you know, wanting to save the planet. You're aware of a lot of this tech that's coming. EFS been around a while. You're like one of the younger kid guys come in with a totally different attitude of how we don't need to fight it if we don't need to fight it. I mean, you know, it's, you know, tell me about inside the evolution of EFF as an organization.
Well, EFF has always been a fairly strongly libertarian-leaning organization. I mean, EFF, simply because, I mean, it evolved out of an issue where the government had no idea what it was doing, and this was back in 1990 when it was a case where some guy had gotten a hold of a 911, an electronic 911 manual, and posted it to a bunch of bulletin board servers back in the days when you had to dial up to an individual computer to post something. And the government said, oh my God, OMG, terrorists, you know, people won't be able to call 911 because hackers will break the 911 system. And so they started seizing servers left and right without a warrant. I'll take that back. In this case, I think they may actually have had a warrant. But there was one guy they seized it from who, after they seized it, they deleted all his emails before giving it back to him. And it was actually a computer that was used by his business, and so it caused a huge headache for him. And so, in the end, long story short, you know, the EFF grew out of cases where it was clear the government had no idea what it was doing, and so we were just of the opinion, EFF was of the opinion, government just stay out of it, you know. Fundamentally, the less government interferes in people's lives, the better things tend to be. And so that's definitely sort of the origin of the EFF.
Okay.
And so again, that was, like I said, that was back in 1990, and you're absolutely right. That was when I was only 6 years old, so.
This has been around a while. You know, think about it. You know, I'm a young activist in my 20s. I have four kids. You know, they're now 25 to 30 or something. You know, I have six grandkids now. And I'm a young libertarian activist, freedom, everybody, you know, everybody else is drinking Kool-Aid. And you're going, holy crap, does anybody really see what's going on here?
Yep.
So you have to have confidence as, you know, just my personality. I just go, no, I know what I know. I don't give a crap what these guys say. It is, man, this is getting bad. Well, EFF starts coming around. Wired magazine, you know, is kind of going to free the planet with tech and so on in the 90s. We start, you know, a lot. But all of a sudden, a lot of the imaginations are being stripped from the shelves. There's no sci-fi anymore. You know, it used to be entire sections at your grocery store instead of Harlequin romances. You mean you had, you know, sci-fi imagination of the youth and the space travel kind of, woohoo, we're going to free. And it just started all go away. You're at the Blockbuster videos. All of a sudden, you know, sci-fi got, you know, merged into horror and action. Then you start going, you're going, what the heck is going on? Then you have guys like you that come up with the computer and the internet era. And because I remember Pong, man. I mean, you know, I could see where this was going. So I'm going, all right. When we have the capacity to do commerce without having to get a, because what got me going in the late 90s was my father manufactured camping trailers for touring motorcycles they wanted to take to Europe and omnibus trade competitiveness act of how much we rule you and cut of the trade of this and that and there. And I go, I get it. Government's just a gang with a flag. They're just like, hey, man, we got a violin case with a big, giant, you know, chopper Apache in it, okay? So we're going to do whatever the hell we want. And I'm going, wow, they're not about freedom. Once you get that, once you understand that, once you understand what you're really up against, you understand the solution. The solution is not having anything for them to take, not having anything for them to surveil, not being being open for everything and every transaction, every credit card of every, you know, latte you bought. I'm going, this is enormous power. And for the first time in human history, the king has been able to get into the heads of the serfs. And they know what you're thinking before you even think it. And they're trying to just turn the dial. You know what it was? Captain America, Winter Soldier. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh!
I try not to give the movie industry money.
No. This entire movie was about to go, how the hell would they not know who to kill? The whole movie, the point, I'll skip to the end, it was, we're going to take out 20, 40 million people that are the genesis of all our problems. They ain't getting the message of the state be the boss. And if we have our, you know, helicarriers go out with the software, and we just waste out these 40 million people around the planet, then everything's okay, it's all good. And Captain America is like, no, we're going up. It was all anti-NSA, the whole freaking movie.
I'm going to have to check it out.
You're
going
to have to check
that.
It out. You
that
watch
sounds like
it.
My type of movie.
No. You watch. Anytime I have conversation with people, like exactly goes like this. I'm going, have you seen it? No. Watch it. And you will see, you go, damn, Ernie was right on. Holy crap. So it was Michael Nystrom from Daily Paul. We were talking, and he goes, well, I'm gonna put it up. I go, you do it. And he puts it up on Daily Paul and says, you know, Ernie's always steered me pretty good. Should I watch this? And the whole Daily Paul went, oh, my God, you haven't watched it? So you'll see my point with this. But the thing is that it almost seems like a steam valve. You know, just kind of, you know, let us take a breath in that we see it. But it doesn't matter if we can't stop it. So I'm looking at a future of now we have, are you familiar with OuterNet?
OuterNet, I haven't heard of.
Write this down. Freaking do it. Are you at a computer?
Yep.
Right now, put in OuterNet. What this is, OuterNet is a satellite-based, you know, CubeSat kind of, it's up there, done. It turned on August, okay? August 11th, mm-hmm. My anniversary. And what it is a satellite you carry with you. It goes, picks up the signal. It downloads it to a hard drive, like a DVR, a video, and Khan Academy, and whatever. It turns every freaking village into a learning center.
Huh.
And you, but what can, it's ones and zeros. What can you transmit?
Right.
Bitcoin transactions. to a kid with a smartphone in the village of whatever, that the entire valley is now on, you know, the system. We have 3, 4, 5 billion people either underserved financially or have no financial services at all, and all they got to do is have a live webcam of village life, or, you know, want to market some freaking, you know, silkworm, newfound moth, whatever, and they're freaking gazillionaires, you know, if they can get through all of the hurdles that our traditional system has. But they, them, those do not want that to happen. So EFF, in your kind of, you know, on this stuff, I'm going, wow, man, this is where the defense is. It's just the, it being, you don't get SWAT teamed just by accessing web pages.
Right. Yep. And that's exactly the, I mean, that's the precisely the sort of thing that, that EFF exists to prevent or to fight against.
There was an EFF involvement in, here's another one, put Iridium free texting. Iridium were satellites, Motorola satellites that were put up, a constellation of 80-something satellites that were put up in the late 90s. Now, see, this is an old activist, okay? I remember this stuff. Mm-hmm. They put them up, and it was to have satellite everybody anywhere, communication, phone, kind of, and the man's like, oh, hell no. This is at the same time that they're putting on fiber optics going across the Pacific, and how do you do that with a satellite that wasn't there? And they're like, they didn't like it, all right? So this sits on the shelf for a while. All of a sudden, in the last year, they have turned on the satellites, and you buy a couple hundred dollar, like a hotspot for your phone. You're texting and imaging from the South Pole, North Pole, whatever, and it's free, and bite me. Done. Next.
Mm-hmm.
You do outer net with that. Next. Bitcoin transactions. Next. You see my point? CubeSats. Yep. Next. SpaceX. Next. When we did Spaceship One, Government Zero, look this up. Spaceship One. All one word, space, government, zero.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm familiar with Spaceship One.
Okay, but you got to see the sign, Spaceship One, Government Zero. Now, what we did, we went to the first launch, and we made these signs. Bert Rattan grabs a sign from me, gives it to me. We got to send a message to the media. Standing on top of the space capsule holding that sign, Spaceship One, Government freaking nothing, all right? The reason was is because we understood the power of being able to privately put up our own satellites. And Telstar, that was a weight and size of a freaking school bus, is now, you know, your freaking cell phone. It's over, yep. Man. It is over, over, over. And I need EFF to understand and know all this stuff, because I see this is where it's going. And whenever the rubber meets the road, it could be as simple as I ordered a computer that didn't have the NSA encrypted seal of you're allowed. And we went through this when you were in junior high in the mid-90s. It was called, yep, Clipper chip technology.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all this PGP, Zimmerman, you know, Reno and Clinton saying you're not allowed and we need to get in the back door of every email, every fax, every printer, everything. And I think it was EFF that came out with the code to decrypt all the information that they're put on every page of a color printout from your color printer. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Tell the audience about that real quick, because that was EFF thing.
So that one was, I think it was probably late 90s or maybe even early 2000s. So the issue was that color laser printers were apparently printing out tiny little microscopic unique patterns of yellow dots, so that when you printed something out, it could be traced back to the, it was basically like a unique ID for that printer. And so they could figure out exactly what printer, down to the make, model, serial number, that printed something out. And ostensibly, theoretically, you know, they always have these excuses, and the excuse is it was to prevent counterfeiting. That if somebody printed out, you know, a counterfeit, you know, $100 bill,
or something, yeah,
that you could trace it back to the printer that had printed it. But of course, the printer didn't only print these yellow dots when it was printing out, you know, fake money. You know, you could print out, you know, a political text, and it would happily print these yellow dots, and so you could be traced to, you know, who was reading this subversive material. Or something like that.
Well, and it had so, where if you got the serial number, then it goes, okay, where did it go? Well, it went to Staples. Well, who did it go? It went to this credit card. Done. Next.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, what day and did so, it go? It would go to the surveillance tape of the guy paying cash. I mean, this was, and the EFF came up and they're going, look, man, do you guys really, this is code is in there. This isn't a secret. Now, why do you think the Clinton administration stopped bitching? because they did it.
Yep.
So this is, I'm really glad to have gotten a hold of a technologist such as yourself. I don't know, what do you call it? Yeah, technologist. Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
So that's at EFF, that's able to, that understands a lot of these different things that are coming. And I'm glad you got, you allowed me to express myself here in the post show, because EFF, my concern in the past has been your limited resources. I mean, to be taking on everybody's everything, but I want to make sure that you guys are keen to this. I don't need, I'm worried about having tech that doesn't have their approval of permission, that I don't need their approval or permission. That they're going to bring out the gunships on this one. When I can just do whatever the heck I want, they don't even know it. Psychotic freaking sociopaths of government, they can't stand that.
Yeah.
So what do you think their reaction is going to be to this new tech?
I mean, we've already seen their reaction is, OMG, for everyone's security, we can't have strong encryption. In the end, they can shout and scream and complain all they want. But the one wonderful thing about tech, and especially software, is it's an international thing. You may outlaw encryption in this country, but what's going to happen when, somebody in a more liberal democracy or someone in a boat offshore decides to develop some encryption technology, and then, people start using it? Are you going to make everyone who uses encryption a criminal?
A space station.
Or a private space station.
No, it's absolutely happening now. The CubeSats, yeah. they launch 20, 30 at a time, dozens at a time. As SpaceX is going up to resupply the ISS, like, who cares? Yep. On the way, by the way, we just threw up an entire constellation and we're done.
Yep.
So
exactly.
And where's EFF in that? I don't know. I want to help. So let me know. Thanks for spending a second. Is there anything? Give absolutely out some web pages and stuff and do it. We can work together on pimping and promoting and doing, because, damn, I can see this battle is not about us being able to, get permission or lobby Congress or vote, blah, 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 blah. That's just a total freaking waste of my time. It's where we need to just defend the idea of even having ideas.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I know. But we have this, one thing you guys might be interested in, BitcoinSummit.info. We're going to have a Bitcoin Summit here on Pi Day, March 14, 15. Yep. Andreas Antonopoulos will be speaking, Davi Bark from Bitcoin.bombs, Tux Event, and then a bunch of the wallets and exchanges and everything, kind of showing newbies and merchants. Here we go. And it's all, why always Arizona? Always comes out of Arizona. Why Arizona? Because we're not sitting on our butt. That's why. We're not waiting on anybody, and we're just doing it. But when it starts getting to where the man doesn't like that, we need somebody like EFF say, hey, see, they didn't like it. Go get them.
Yep. No, that's what we're here to try and prevent, or at least fight back again.
All right. Very cool. I want to help promote whatever. You got something coming up or something you need help with, promoting or something, you let me know.
Will do.
We need this, and we need someone like you to understand, but you need to get kind of up to speed on stuff. Remember this. OuterNet.
I'll definitely check it out.
Iridium free texting. Spaceship One, Government Zero. The CubeSat space. I mean, we keep up on this kind of stuff because we're looking for the tech that makes it to where it doesn't matter what the government does.
Yep.
And I need you guys to help me, find out what they're doing. They're going to come get me while I'm trying to, not matter. And then all of a sudden, here comes the SWAT team. So y'all help me out with that, all right?
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks. Jeremy, go ahead and give out some websites and whatever goody information you need for people to know.
I mean, the fundamental website is https://EFF.org. And, from there you can find everything about the EFF. You can check out our work and, the browser plugins, our rating of different tech on how it, protects your privacy, and also rating of different companies on how they will protect your privacy or not.
Awesome.
So EFF.org.
EFF.org, and look for the evaluation of different companies, different tech, different. Where else are you going to go? EFF.org. Jeremy, thank you very much for coming on and sharing with
us.
Go ahead and hold on a second. I want to talk to you a little bit. We'll be right back tomorrow with another great show, as always, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. See you then. Okay, there we go. Thank you very much. Donna will have,
pleasure.
Within an hour or two, you'll get the whole show and doing whatever. See, one of the big things, I spent extra time with you and giving you this perspective on this is because, you know, I wanted you to know. I mean, you know, this mesh network, power cable, doing different type of communication, UHF, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. You, when they deregulated UHF, you know, like Channel 45 kind of stuff, when they did that, it was because they went digital and all that opened up a lot of, you know, white space kind of thing. Well, oh, they're able to put up a tower that can go 60-mile radius, covers in, you know, large metropolitan areas in free access, and all of a sudden you do that with connected with Tucson to Phoenix to Flagstaff, you got yourself an internet that everybody can use, and it's off the man's grid. And they're like,
yep.
Oh, hell no. Then you go to satellite, you go CubeSats for, I don't know, you know, for $1 million, you have the entire planet on and we're done. This is coming. This is why they have to have, I always go, St. Louis Arch, Golden Gate Bridge, toast, man. They got to thermonuke something and, you know, pay attention over here and Durka Durka Jihad and don't worry, we got to save you, because they're that desperate and they're that evil to do this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just like, damn, I need someone like you that understands the tech. And do we get to the point to where it just doesn't freaking matter what they do? We're not there anymore. And everybody keeps worrying about, you know, the surveillance. I mean, it's just a supporting evidence of the reason to not be on DARPA.
Absolutely.
I'm with you, brother. Go ahead.
Yep.
Go ahead and check out some of those things. The outer net thing, it'll freak you out. This, you know, I want you to, before I go, I want you to do this one thing. Go go to YouTube first, because sometimes they don't have that same graphic. And I mean the same video. I want to do one of the first ones. Go to YouTube and then put outer net. Let me go with you and make sure. And this is just the beginning. And go video. Okay, it says Outer Net Overview.
Yep, I'm watching it.
Okay, go ahead. I'll wait. There's another one called Lantern. That's the next wave.
Huh.
You feel me?
Yeah, that is pretty impressive.
Okay, now go to Outer Net Lantern in a YouTube. Well, there it is. You go to, you know, on the right side when you have all the other videos, you'll see Introducing Lantern.
There it is.
See, this is not later. This is now.
Yep.
And you can watch the rest of that later. It's like 5:10, but you start to get it, right?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
All right. Now, in YouTube, put Iridium text messaging. See, when I'm going to like Coins in the Kingdom in Orlando, and I got the crypto college guys of Bitcoin, whatever, and they're at MI freaking T, and they don't know any of this stuff, I'm going, what the hell good are you guys? probably the best one is to go Iridium Free Text Gizmondo, because I remember they did a story on it, and that was probably Iridium Free Text Gizmondo. Anyway, it's in there somewhere. But all it is it uses the Iridium satellites. So you have Iridium Go satellite phone and Iridium this and Iridium that. They use these satellites that have been up there for, God, since the late 90s.
Right.
You know? So an activist such as me, I'm going, hey, you already got the satellites sitting up there. I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. You know, they kind of shut, we didn't want. There were judges even trying to make them deorbit the satellites. Because,
right?
I mean, you know, they it was bankrupt and the asset that kind of need, and the government said, and they go, no, make us. You know, how you gonna make a defunct company deorbit their satellites, you know, or whatever? So it's a black bag of whatever the hell. So with this kind of stuff, then you have different UHF mesh networks, and you do hell, they want to use the, for years they've been talking about using the power lines as the hell, they're doing it with the smart meters, you know. So I'm going, this is the tech that is so widely available, certainly industrialized nations, that it's already happening. And if you're in a developing country and you got, you know who Sally Struthers is?
Mm-hmm.
Sally Struthers, you know, used to be a character on All in the Family, Archie Bunker kind of thing, and she's always got the little Congo kid and loincloth and the big belly and kind of, you need to give us money. And I'm going, hey, just give the kid a freaking cell phone, you know?
So, exactly.
So they got a smartphone on their hip, and they're the guy for the village. Then you start seeing people DIYing their own cell phone towers. Have you seen that?
I have seen some of that, yeah.
You know, so this is now that it's just ones and zeros. When it, because I don't want to get into the point that I'm negotiating with the man for ones and zero usage or transmitting or receiving. When it gets to the point that you can't, you know, control that and it's encrypted or you don't even know it's freaking there on the wavelength of the, you know, the photon light signal kind of. This is one, another thing that I started, we cover a lot of this stuff, is that using the light in your room of the flickering that you don't even, not even perceptible, is enough for photo sensors to pick up in your computer, and it makes that break of transition between computers because all it's sensing is photons.
Right. Yep. No, I read a bit about this too. Yeah.
So I'm going
crazy stuff.
It's to what end? To where they can't, they, them, those. I go, there are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? So they, because they always in radio, they say, well, they, who's they? And I go, let me tell you who they are. They, them, those. The guys won't leave me alone. That's who they are. You know, I recognize them as very simple. They won't leave me alone. That's they. Okay. So yep. you can categorize any way, freaking way you want, but are you a leave me aloneist or not? They go, are you a anarchist, Ernie? I go, compared to what? I mean, you know, you're bullshit. I go, that's my choice. Is this bullshit or none? I vote none. I vote none. Okay, do a Google image search, or screw Google, but anyway, go to image search. And I want you to look up something. This is where the Lovolution logo first came. Did you know that I created the Lovolution logo, the Ron Paul Revolution thing?
No, I did not.
Okay, I'm the one that created that, and this is where it came from. Put in a Google image search, go still voting with a question mark. Still voting?
I like it.
I'm running for Secretary of State. I ran for Congress a bunch. I ran against John McCain for U.S. Senate. I've run for Secretary of State. I've been doing this since 90, man. I've been in there paying their ass. But what happened was, since 02, I haven't voted. They go, yeah, well, you don't even vote. I go, I'm so glad you brought that up. And all the other press, you stupid moron. Didn't you get the memo? You never ask Ernie that question. So I'm like, you're still voting and running for Secretary of State. And my name's really small. No, that was just an excuse for me to put the sign up. Okay, so we had these signs everywhere. It got voted the most popular sign for the 06 election campaign. That ends in November, middle of January. Ron Paul makes the announcement. He's kind of sort of almost thinking about creating a blue ribbon panel for an exploratory committee who someday might run for president. And I go, boom, done. Here we go. That, I bet, Ron Paul Revolution. We started making those signs. I send them all to my libertarian activist friends around the country. Start sending me, you know, just take the video and just send me the disc. I'll take care of it. We started putting up videos and it exploded. And that's how it started.
So, no kidding.
So when we do the BitcoinSummit.info thing, why is it always Arizona? When we do SAFE, Second Amendment for Everyone, we do a bunch of stuff on that. We do it because Arizona's a bunch of freaking hardcore anarchist activists from back in the late 80s, early 90s, and we never freaking went away. But where do you put the pressure? It's always on the empowerment of the individual to not seek, need, ask for, or be threatened by state control.
Absolutely. No, so, I mean, that's fundamentally what it comes down to, is being able to live your life without even needing to interact with the government.
And when MadeSafe came up, they've been working on that since, what, 06 or whatever. David Irvine and I became friends. I'm going to go to the Texas Bitcoin Conference just to see him again. You know, we go through it and we split an investment in Safe Coins kind of because whatever, and I bought in because I was in Panama when it happened. And I go, man, this is going to go faster than you think. And they were very appreciative because we kind of pumped it. And all of a sudden, they're at New York Bitcoin Conference and Forbes and Bloomberg Bloomberg, and everybody's, you know, and interviewing them, and everybody stayed for them to get added at the end of the conference to talk and stand an ovation of, oh my God, they launch it in April, the funding for that in 5 hours, $7 million and done. And I go, hey man, I was in on an airplane and you said that I was going to, and he goes, you know, don't worry about it, Ernie, we got you covered, and we split some. So I'm just going, so the thing is that I put the emphasis on this, and the reason I'm talking extra with you, Jeremy, is because having this, your age, having this ability to understand what's going on, having the education for it, making the decision to be in a position to where you advocate for the individual, bite me, you know, that I want that whenever you see an opportunity, we do a lot of stuff at Freedom's Phoenix. We have a magazine, a newspaper, the website, the radio show, you know, the video. We do, I mean, we're, you know, ass-whipping summits. We do all kinds of stuff. And I'm going, look, if we devote one thing to one thing, what is it? It's to the individual. My grandkids are not seeking a permission slip. They're not going to get my retirement is from what? They're going to take whatever I have in IRA and Social Security kind of done. And it's gone. Okay? Oh, it's another South Park. And it's gone. Go South Park and it's gone. Do it right now.
That one I've seen. That one I've seen.
And it's gone. All right?
Gone.
You know, and that's exactly what I see that for everything. Yeah, human scent iPad. You got to watch that. You'll freaking, you won't believe that got made. And EFF doesn't have it on the front page. That's what you're going to find out. Hey, thanks for coming on and spending the extra time with me.
Absolutely.
I feel good about being able to call on you in the future with the right perspective. I wanted to give this to you because this is what we cover. I have all these guys that's going on for years. We go, look, we can see what's going on. When did the Spaceship One Government Zero thing happen? That was like June of 04. And we're screaming. We're going, yeah, do a Google image search. Do a Spaceship One, Space Government Zero. And you'll see the signs that we made in our freaking living room as we're watching videos.
Actually, I already checked it out. That was pretty awesome.
And we have,
I'm surprised I didn't see it because I actually went to the Spaceship One launch, too, when I was in college. And so I'm
the
amazed.
The first one?
I think we made it to the second one.
Yeah, we just went to the first one.
Oh, and okay, then, that's what I missed.
So the thing is, there was 13,000 people there, and the only sign they had was one sign, a guy selling binoculars.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, governments lost in space.
Crazy.
You can't hear the government scream in space. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I love that one.
You know, scroll down. You'll see some of the other signs. You know, and Bert Rattan, when I'm holding it when they started parading it, I ran over to that one sign. My senior editor on Freedom's Phoenix, Pal Gamble's the guy that thought of that. And I go, oh, that's awesome. That was a media hit right in our heads right off the bat. So we did that. He ran up and grabbed that sign. The Discovery Channel did a, what was it called? Called Into the Black or Black Sky or Black something, and it was on, you know, two movies that was on this, you know, building up to this launch, and one of those film documentary, you see Bert Rattan run over and grab it from me. He just grabbed it and ran off, and he goes, I gotta send a message to the media. And I'm like, okay, we got more. I mean, you know, so we got to go to the hangout with the billionaires at the end of the thing. We just all walked in with the signs. They just thought we were part of the thing, you know. So the whole time you'll see pictures there of me holding it up. I was at the party they had afterwards, and I just kept switching out signs. I'm just standing there on the edge of the crowd just holding this up, getting the message out. And who are we up against? I'll tell you, you want to see some regulation? This is how it freaking starts, a little behind the scenes thing. A representative from the Mojave Airport came up, and he wanted to tell me all about it. He goes, yeah, well, we got the regulation done, and we're fixed, and we got it going on. I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I remember in the late 80s when it was Reagan was still president, and he gave the Medal of Freedom Award to Bert Rattan, and it was for doing Voyager that went around the Earth, circumnavigating in 9 days or whatever, no fueling, restop kind of thing. So, and that's in the Smithsonian. When he did that, Bert Rattan made a big deal. What a great and wonderful and free country we have, because all he had to do is build the plane, you know, put a tail number on it and said, here's my flight plan. I'm going to go around the world. And they go, peace out. Let me know how it works out. So he goes, see, freedom to innovate, and this is great and wonderful in America. Well, then you go to fast forward Spaceship One, and what did they do? They go and they say, we're going to file a flight plan with the FAA, and we say, all right, we're going to go to space, and then we're just going to come back and land. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Done. the guy from the Mojave Airport goes, yeah, well, we need, you know, a permission slip, you know, to go to space. And they go, well, we don't have a permission slip. We don't, you know, I'll just do it. I don't care. You know, and they go, no, we need a slip of paper. And they go, well, we don't have one. Okay, well, we need a slip of paper saying we don't need a slip of paper. They immediately created a bureaucracy for the FAA.
Jesus,
you see, it's this attitude. That's why I like having someone like you that comes into this. You know, you may not have been around from the beginning, but you've seen what's going on and you understand and the philosophy of and where this is going and the tech that's going to make it to where it doesn't matter.
Yep.
You see my point?
That's what it comes down to. Absolutely.
So everybody's going, well, we got it. And I talked to Perry and Boring. We're under the digital Chamber of Commerce stuff, you know, Bitcoin Foundation. We had 3 hours of Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton debating on whether they should even have the Bitcoin Foundation that Cody's, you know, slapping them around for. The next day I have, you know, Andreas Antonov last Wednesday comes on and does a postmortem on the blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, does Bitcoin need the foundation? No, then what the hell is it doing there? You know, why are you guys, of all people, wanting to nuzzle up the regulators and paying the core developers? That's like a judge thing. You know, it's like, not only do you not be corrupt, you don't want to look corrupt. Well, that looks corrupt as hell, okay? So it's just, so these kinds of things, and I'm telling you, I am 53. I'm a geezer, man, compared to all y'all, but I was a young activist from the late 80s and understood what the real problem was. The real problem is us in our minds thinking we need to have a permission slip. It's even when they can't even know we're there to get permission on anything. So that's my point. So I need your help. And when you come up with something, you let me know. And we got the Bitcoin Summit info thing. We'll just have some fun with that. And that's to get the video. And I don't even care. 3 people show up. Doesn't even matter. I want the video and, you know, start training people. Because we have DVD duplicators. I can do 300 to 500 DVDs an hour. And I got 25,000 blanks just waiting.
Holy Jeebus.
We're activists.
Yep.
So when I go to EFF and I send people to you, I'm like, all right, what did they do? Well, you know, it's kind of, you're limited. Okay, fine. You got limited, you know, scope on what you can do. I want to focus on they can't come after and SWAT team me because I had the capacity to do something without their permission. They didn't even know about it, and they're just afraid. That's where I need you guys.
That's where we try to be. That's where we try to be.
All right. I'm glad we made this acquaintance and we got to speak. So I feel a lot better that you even have this knowledge. And I, you know, showed you some tech here that is bypassing this whole dark bullshit of its ones and zeros and outer net, the kid in the Congo. You see my point, how that's being done?
Yeah, that is really cool. I'm definitely going to look more into that because that is pretty awesome.
Done. You know, CubeSat's putting up 30 at a time and they have an outer net and flipped it on August 11th. I remember it was my anniversary. August 11th flipped it on. I'm telling people for a year, and I go, yeah, now what? You know? And they go, yeah, but we all shut up. Because these high-tech, you know, Jeremy equivalents in Savannah of the Congo, the South Mara, the jungle of the Amma, whatever, they're sitting there, you know, they have, you go any, I was talking to this one guy, and he goes, you know, it is amazing to me. I've traveled all over the world. I mean, you know, guys, the camel guys taking us on the tour, the, you know, the Sphinx of doing whatever. I'm in the jungle, the Amazon, the tribe, and I need, and we're doing some trading, and he always has small amounts of gold, because whenever he does this trade, he goes, man, gold be universal, okay?
Yep.
They know how to check it and do whatever, and I don't care where the hell I went, they're within a few dollars or whatever the spot price was. Across the planet. That one thing they know what the spot price of gold is, okay? So I go, wow, that is awesome. You do this tech, now you got, I don't even need to know what the gold is. I got my Bitcoin. So then I see the future is so different, and it's hard for my generation or people I know to understand. I just gave a presentation to Economic Discussion Group. You know, it's like doctor, lawyer, judges, kind of, you know, leaning Cato, Goldwater Institute of Justice people, you know, here in Arizona. And they asked me to give a presentation on space travel, you know, because we have a lot of stuff. They thought that was interesting. And you'll like this. This is when they became interested. One of the guys that's, you know, status apologist, whatever, comes and goes, yeah, this space thing's taken off. You know, Congress has come up with a law to protect property rights of which asteroid you're getting. And I go, are you kidding me? I'm going to wait for the Alliance cruiser to come out between Mars and Jupiter to protect my property rights? I mean, hell, do I even want to pay for that? I mean, you know, what are you, stupid? Because Planetary Resources is looking, you know, to track, you know, which asteroids are worth getting. They go get it. They mine it. They do it. It's just like the first Alien. I mean, that's what they were doing, is hauling in an asteroid. Yeah. So I'm going, you know, this is, I go, you guys have no idea how much further this is along. And if you're waiting for the Alliance cruiser to go out and protect commerce in there, you don't understand what's going on.
Yep.
So I go through the whole thing, and they're like, damn. And I go, yeah. You, man, you do. But I get also, when I'm talking, and it's these people that are teaching, training, and professors of the next generation like you guys. And I talk to, you know, the crypto college, whatever, MIT, never heard of any of this stuff, just like you did. And I'm going, I want to bitch slap the shit out of your professors. What the hell good are they? You're getting this education for why? You see my point?
Yep.
All right, brother. I feel a lot better, you know, having been able to share a little bit with this stuff, because I'm already there. We're way past. We're doing big summit, this kind of, man, leave me alone, and you're not allowed, and you can't, and it's over. And while people, and I don't want EFF being out there like the Bitcoin Foundation or these other guys sitting there negotiating what kind of law we're going to get to give us longer chains.
Yep. Well, I mean, we do. We try to work every angle we can.
I understand.
That's what it does come down to.
But let's not forget about, you know, I don't, what chains? I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I had the key to that. Hey, Jeremy, thanks for spending the extra time, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Keep me in mind.
All right.
All right. Bye.
All right. Have a great day. Bye-bye.